Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
It is often said that looking for a job is a full-time job. And even though you're putting your best foot forward, following up, and keeping your spirits high, at best you may get rejected, and at worst you may get no response at all. Suffice it to say, finding a great job is not an easy feat. In the second installment of our How to Get a Job series, we'll be discussing practical strategies for how to identify your dream job, ace an interview, clean up your resume, and make a memorable impression. We'll also be looking at some of the challenges in the hiring process, like implicit bias and recognizing a toxic work culture. To help us make sense of it all, we're joined by Maggie Mistel, a career consultant and former host of the SiriusXM show, Making a Living with Maggie, Stephanie Ziv, a certified life and executive coach and featured expert on the Today Show's Coach Me If You Can series, and Dr. Tessa West, an associate professor of psychology at New York University. Dr. West studies the nature and dynamics of social interactions between people who come from different groups. Maggie, Stephanie, and Tessa, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
A huge part of the hiring process is getting in the door, the interview, as we've been talking about. And we actually have a clip, Susanna in the Bronx, who's going to tell us what she does to get ready for an interview.
A big interview is all physical and mental. I like to make sure that I'm dressed to the nines. It could be going on an interview for the smallest type of company, but I make sure that I'm dressed like top managerial staff at the company. And I also make sure that I get myself there an hour. Yes, an hour before my actual interview.
An hour before the interview. Maggie, what are some of the key elements to having a great interview?
You have to be prepared to ask questions, DW. And a lot of people, you know, they come in with maybe standard ones about the organization, but you've got to delve deeply into this role. And I agree that, you know, doing informational interviews with people in that company beforehand, whether in that job or even and worked at the company or checking out Glassdoor for reviews, gives you that deeper level of connection. One thing that I always do and recommend to my clients is to, if they're a public company that you're interviewing with, is to go online and listen to their latest earnings call or read their annual report. You know, these are the types of things that the average job seeker doesn't do, but it can give you insight into where the company is going and their goals and their mission, you know, beyond just a one-liner. You could even look up press about the company, right? There's so much out there now with social media. You can find out a lot about an organization. Even on LinkedIn, you can follow them as an organization. There's so much you can do, and you want to make specific questions about the areas you're going into, perhaps about a latest new project that the company announced that was in the news. It just shows that you're going that extra mile and taking that extra interest, and that will help them take an extra interest in you.
Entering the door as an informed person. Jean in Homedale, New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I've been a recruiter for about 26 years, and I'm really loving this conversation because I think it touched, you know, on every point. Who gets the job, who doesn't? There is a bias among older people, and sometimes rightfully so, and I could be part of that problem because I'm not as good with computers. I'm good with the people person. I'm great with getting people in. But when it comes to all the, you know, systematic things that have to happen, somebody younger than me will probably do a better job. Secondly, I wanted to say resume and cover letter speak 1,000 words, in my opinion. I think it's not dead. All right. I don't want to go on social media and look for this person and whatnot and find out that they like Trump or they like, you know, Hillary. You know, that's not going to give me a sense of who they are or what they can do. It might give me a sense of who they are, but not what they can do. So I do like the resume. I know how they punctuate. I know if they have to, you know, write a letter, or if I'm hiring a business analyst, they have to know how to write. So if they can't write their resume correctly or their cover letter correctly, you know, that's going to be a problem
right.
for my clients. I also agree when she was talking about, and I'm so sorry because all of you have been talking about trying to take your names down correctly, things about, you know, we have different people from different cultures come in.
Right.
Americans tend to say, I can do everything. They're great salespeople at what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not really be able to, but they have the energy. They have the, you know, the enthusiasm that they like. Where if we're talking with, you know, African Americans or people from Asia, they tend to downplay it. And, you know, they're not as steady to say what they can do and what they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And it does nick them off a couple of, you know, ways because, you know, I often hear, oh, you know, I didn't get that enthusiasm. And I'm like, well, A, they have always been taught to be that way, like, you know, underplay what they can do or not be, you know, be more humble.
Right.
And so that's one of the things as far as age. That definitely, like I said,
yeah.
I made that point earlier.
But there is a balance to strike there, right, in terms of confidence and sort of knowing the context you're walking into. Tessa, does that strike you as accurate in terms of a potential cultural difference, or does that, do you see that a different way?
Well, I think we have really strong kind of cultural beliefs about what different people do and whether that's representative of their actual skill level. So we might have beliefs that Black Americans come across as less confident and white Americans come across as more confident. We might also have beliefs whether that confidence is actually associated with real skill. But I think what's kind of really interesting about this point is there are all these assumptions of what we are gaining about actual skill level in the workplace based on things like nonverbal confidence. And it's interesting. What we sample in job interviews rarely are the things that actually are what you're going to do in the job. So you might have a smooth interaction with someone that brings up your hockey team, and this came up before, and people are more likely to hire someone that they feel that rapport with. But whether or not you share that same sort of hockey life experience probably has zero impact on whether that person's going to succeed. But we are influenced by those things. And so to the extent that people use that information to form rapport, it can really affect us. But one thing that we can do to help combat some of these biases about cultural differences and competence is to ask everyone kind of the same questions and use that information in the same way. So you don't ask white Americans different kinds of questions than Black Americans. You also have to take into consideration that a Black American who's being interviewed by a panel of white people is probably going to experience a lot more stress and threat in that situation than a white person would. Or a woman being interviewed by a panel of men for an engineering job, that's a completely different psychological experience, and I have research on this, physiologically different experience than men going through that same exact thing. So we have to level the playing field a bit. When we're interviewing minorities, we need to have those interviewers also be racially diverse. Because you're not giving individuals the same chance when whites can form more rapport with other whites and Blacks potentially with other racial in-group members. We tend to have these in-group biases. And we need to ask the same questions and get the same information out of everybody that we know is actually relevant to the job. So we're not basing our impressions on things that are irrelevant, like, you know, how comfortable we felt, which is a gut response that often drives decision-making but isn't actually impacting people's success in the workplace.
I don't know if I agree with that, actually, Tessa.
What are your thoughts, Maggie?
Well, it, you know, in terms of a job interview and the comfort you feel with someone, excuse me, because most often you're going to be working with these folks as a team. I have a client who's interviewing tomorrow, and honestly, he's going in there to make sure this is a team he can work with. He, as the interviewee, is going to be checking his gut feel to see if these are people he can get excited to work with every day. You know, we have to, there's so much now in the workplace, there's so much less hierarchy that our influence is what really we have to leverage. So I appreciate what you're saying about people not being biased and you have to ask the same question. But when it comes to making sure you have a connection with someone and if that can come through in the interview, I think that's really important. And to be honest, as an interviewer myself, you know, in my corporate career when I was hiring, it wasn't so much about culture. I mean, I was able to connect with people of all different cultures, but it was still important if we were going to work together that we have some kind of connection.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, April 26th, 2018. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast on neutralizing workplace racism. If we have any folks who have figured out, hey, this is what to do, any job that you happen to be on, these are the specific steps to follow so that you do not have any issues at all. Hopefully not, but if you need sick time, you get it, no problem. Vacation time, weather's getting warm, you got a trip planned for sometime this summer, no problem. Put your days in, this is when I'm going to be out, no issues at all. If you have to leave early for an emergency, no problem. You get great, and I mean sparkling, performance reviews, all of your raises on time, all of your performance bonuses, no problem. Cushy office, if you need a transfer, things are spectacular and looking like it's going to be that way until you are ready to retire. You are never accused of not fitting in, not being a team player, not being good for the culture of the work environment that we're trying to cultivate. That is never something that you're charged with. You should be the first person to dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if we have any folks, if you're having difficulties, problems of any sort, you would like suggest counter racist suggestions, thoughts on how to deal with your situation, if you just want to share and get possible remedies for how you can move forward solving problems without creating new problems, feel free. Dial in the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Also, you can always email untiljustice@gmail.com if you want to contribute suggestions, comments to anything that is discussed on the broadcast. If you have your own problem, or if you have figured out some things that work well to neutralize and solve problems on the job, definitely drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com and we can read your commentary on the air. Don't know if all of the Bill Cosby news came out, him being found guilty, but certainly we'll chat about that this weekend. Don't know if that popped up in the workplace. As usual, I would have nothing to say about that on the job at all. Have to check in on that later. Quickly about the audio segment that we heard at the beginning, that was a portion of a clip that's about a half hour. They had different topics, suggestions for trying to get a job. Most of that piece centered around trying to get an interview, trying to format your resume. We talked about some of that before. I thought they had some helpful suggestions with some of that. I thought the portion that they talked about during the audio segment in terms of being a well-informed candidate. We talked about that before. I've encouraged that before, just before you get the job and afterwards, to be a well-informed candidate and a well-informed employee, where you are constantly looking to get information so that you can know as much as you can about your employer and your fellow coworkers dash race soldiers, because I think that helps to keep you safe. However, I also thought within that segment, the portion where it was multiple white women speaking, the white woman, I believe her name, Dr. Tessa West. So they had a female who sounded like a white woman. They had a white woman call in and she was talking about confidence and what have you, which I thought was, you know, significant in the system of white supremacy, white people being confident. I think she even said Americans. I don't even think she said white people, American. And then when Dr. Tessa West, who I believe is a white woman, when she came to respond and she was talking about the different cultural reasons as to why that might be and why people might behave that way, what I immediately went to was not that I don't think black people are confident and, you know, brag on themselves or self-promote in the workplace. I think it's in a system of white supremacy. If you are a black person and you tout your strengths and you speak up and make it known, hey, I did this and did that, man, you are going to be the most uppity Negro in the history of it, or intimidating or loud or pushy or aggressive. I mean, they got a billion different ways. And that's why it has to start with system of white supremacy. Not I am confident or too loud or too dark or anything else. It's you, racist man, racist woman, racist child, you all practice white supremacy. That is the root of all of these problems. Statement could be an error, but I certainly do not think so. The portion at the end, I thought the retort, Maggie Mistel, who I think is another white woman, I thought that was important. Also, her retort, where she says, well, I don't know if I agree with that. It's important that we have culture. It's important that we have people that we are excited about working with. All of that just sounded like camouflage for racism, white supremacy. And again, you can't do a segment like this and leave out. There's tons of documents. White people have killed whole forests, publishing books and research papers about how as soon as they look at a piece of paper and see, ooh, this sounds like it could be a Negro name, throw that one in the trash. Oh, sounds like it could be another Negro name, throw that one in the trash. They got tons of reports about this where they are just seeing a nigger name. Oh, I'm totally unexcited to work with this person, even give them an interview. Next. If you don't start with that, then we end up with all this other foolishness that, you know, is just not getting to the issue. Continuing. A couple weeks ago, we had Chantel. She called in performance review where she was disgruntled and deservedly so about not getting her bonus. And she was talking about codification. I think she said that she didn't see a value to codification other than the documentation. Now, at the time, I was, you know, disgruntled for a variety of reasons, but I can certainly understand economic terrorism on the job. And that's how I view when black people are not compensated in the same way on the job. That's economic terrorism. When we do not get the same types of raises, and particularly when whites are getting their bonuses and raises so that they get to make more than you for a whole year or years while you all are on the job, that becomes cumulative economic terrorism. So I totally understand, but I spoke with her later and she apologized. And even said that there is value. She was just upset from the whole race thing. And that happens a lot. And really, if anything, for me, emphasized that on the job, a lot of times they practice racism, white supremacy. We can become emotional or frustrated. There's nothing incorrect about that. You're human. You know, I get frustrated. I get emotional. However, you want to make sure, or we want to try as best we can to make sure that we manage our emotions, and particularly that we do not let our emotions allow us to become reckless with what we say, because that can have huge penalties on the job. The reason I bring this up, seems like almost all of the non-white people that I speak with, especially Cal's listeners, if I speak to them off the air, workplace racism comes up in about 5 minutes. Like, oh yeah, Flood, how you doing? Anyway, you got to believe what these folks are doing on the job. That is generally the way it goes if I speak to a non-white person. So I speak to Chantel, 5 minutes. So on the job, man, I so wish I had kept in mind, this is what she's telling me, I so wish I had kept in mind what's discussed on the cows regularly, that you are under surveillance. I'm paraphrasing, but the gist of it was basically she was saying she had minimized, forgotten, not really appreciated that, wow, I am being watched all the time. Like, they are paying super close attention to what I'm doing, what I'm saying, who I'm talking to, how I'm functioning in the workplace. Like, what? And she even said, if I had been cognizant of that and really keeping that in mind the whole time, I think I would have behaved differently. I would have been more strategic about what I'm doing on the job. And I thought that was so, so critically important, because I think the majority of us just do not recognize, if you are a black person, really anywhere in the system of white supremacy, whether you're on the clock or not, but especially in your work capacity, oh yeah, you are being watched. You should be functioning as though they have recording devices everywhere, video recording devices everywhere, every single one. I don't care if it's the janitor, if they have somebody and their only job is to clean the toilet, you should assume their other job, clean the toilets and watch that nigger. That's the way that you should think on the job. And I say that so that you can strategize, plan accordingly. Like, okay, this is the job that I'm on. I'm going to be watched all the time. There's never going to be a time where I'm by myself, where they're not listening to what I'm saying. So I just have to keep that in mind when I speak and as I'm behaving on the job. That's being codified, in my view. Folks that wrote in, we had a number of folks who, actually we had quite a few people who had suggestions for a listener. They had a question last week about international business travel and tips. I think it might have been their first time traveling outside the states for the job, and just tips, things to do as a non-white person in this capacity to stay safe as you do some company globetrotting. We had several people actually write in with suggestions for this one. First up, I wanted to contribute a question on the weekly broadcast for the caller asking about international travel. I have done this, although the circumstances may be a little different. Most of my trips have been alone to countries inhabited by mostly non-white people. I still believe in the particular case presented, the following suggestions may be helpful. Any of your plans should be centered around the idea that you are a representative to your company and plan to do nothing that will reflect poorly on that company. That may include telling your coworkers that before the trip and that it will influence all decisions you make. This may prevent uneasy situations regarding drug use, drinking, partying, staying up late, conduct during the workday, general association with those traveling with you. Tips: try to determine what the work schedule will be like while you are there and build a routine around that. For example, I have an exercise routine that I stick to, and telling people you will continue that on the trip could take up after hours time you may want to spend alone. Great suggestion. If you're anxious about having to converse with workmates, prepare questions in advance to discuss if they start to speak about begrudgingly giving up details about your personal life. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. If you're anxious about having to converse with workmates, prepare questions in advance to discuss if they start to speak about subjects you are not comfortable with. Use this as an opportunity to learn about how you can get better at your job instead of begrudgingly giving up details about your personal life, which they will likely eventually start asking about. Also, have questions based on the work you will do while you're there. Realize that with your workmates and/or clients, there may be a requirement to spend some time at dinners, engagements, while you are there. Accept that while continuing your code of conduct, which in my view should for sure include sobriety, would be best. Next, be polite and courteous and consider the entirety of your trip from the ride to the airport until you get home as being in the office 24/7. Then, many decisions will be much easier to make and you will be less likely to be caught off guard. I have numerous stories to share and will be doing this in the upcoming weeks. Right on. Next person who had a suggestion on the same subject matter. This is a previous person with suggestions was black male. This is a black female. Listen to the workplace racism broadcasts from last week and wanted to provide some suggestions for the female victim of racism who I believe was said to be in her 20s. If I heard correctly, this female will be traveling to Amsterdam with two suspected racists, one older male, one younger female. I have traveled internationally for work many times. Below are my suggestions. One, be very diligent in whatever assignments you have and be very courteous. Ask lots of questions about situations or tasks that are new to you or you are not very familiar with. Ask the manager in charge of this trip to let you know what is expected of you and the policies and procedures that guide international travel for your organization. Read and become familiar with them before you depart. Policy and procedure. Next, you should avoid spending time with coworkers once the work is done, especially if it is very late at night. And she has that in boldface print. I cannot emphasize this suggestion enough. Maybe I'll read it one more time just in case. You should avoid spending time with coworkers once the work is done, especially if it is very late at night. Make whatever excuses you can. I have to call back home. I'm tired. I'm not feeling well. Whatever, to depart their company. Do not travel alone at night. Do not partake in any type of drugs or alcohol. I could have swore I heard that before. Period. Be careful about drinking anything that you did not personally order and see what the waitstaff place in front of you or a drink that has been out of your sight for a period of time, like while in the bathroom. Do not socialize with your coworkers unless it is mandatory and be an observer rather than a participant with social activities they require you to become involved in. I've had to socialize and eat all my meals, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks with my coworkers on many international business trips, and I am very cordial. We would spend from 7:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. together, but once the event's day is over, I take my leave and go to my room. On such trips, I have been required to attend karaoke dances, etc. I am courteous and cordial, but I do not dance or sing. I simply observe the suspected racists. I tell them I cannot dance and do not know how to sing. Instead, I try to learn more about my colleagues, my job, and the organization in order to further advance myself by observing and asking questions. Spectacular. If you are you can use that modus operandi in pretty much any circumstance, whether it's work-related or not, and you will probably be okay without producing too many problems. Observe and ask questions. Use the opportunity to learn about something constructive. Observe. Ask questions. Great suggestions, in my view, for international travel or anything else that you're doing. But definitely, I think the person who was going to do the international traveling, they were going to Amsterdam. And as I said last week, I think they are known for being kind of a drug and party type of, kind of like Vegas for people stateside. For one of those types of places, I would make it known. I don't do any of that. I'm being a prude. I'm doing, you know, whatever we're doing for work, and that's that. And when you get back, if they ask any of those type, you know, of tacky type of questions, you know, did you get any while you were over there? Did you get to do any partying and get down in Amsterdam? I worked. was with, you know, our coworkers. We worked, learned quite a bit. That was it. Didn't do any partying, any getting down. Stayed very dedicated to the company while abroad. I do have other commentary I'll read as we proceed, but I'll go ahead and get to some of the folks who dialed in. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. With that one question that I will get out this week, I am sure we have some listeners who have a work experience where they found out the hard way. Yes, you are always under surveillance, under the system of racism, white supremacy as a black person. Always super, super, super watched as a black person, system of white supremacy. If any other folks have reports on that where they were reminded or they were found or just had to adjust their code or were thankful that they were already functioning in a manner thinking that, oh yeah, I'm being watched while I'm on the job, that would be great, because I do think that a lot of us, myself included, have been guilty of just not recognizing that whites, they are out watching constantly. If you dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free to chime in.
Hi, boss.
Oh, Stacy in the UK joining first. 1:31 a.m. Friday morning.
Precisely. Good morning. Good evening. I guess it's evening for you and the rest of the callers. I've got a few updates, but just in terms of the two things, Amsterdam and then the observations. The discussion about Amsterdam actually reminded me that when I did go on that trip, I was invited to a hotel excursion to the jacuzzi late at night. I guess it was the group deciding that they were going to go. I obviously did not. It was a mixed group of people, non-whites, whites, male, female, and I guess of varying ages. But yeah, those things actually do come up, and I was probably accused of being boring and a prude, but that was okay for me. There was absolutely no way I was going to get caught up in that kind of situation, and I don't mind being called a prude. In terms of the observation, I did give an example last week, but I was thinking about it in between, so it's interesting that it actually came up this evening again. It's happened so many times, but one example was, and I guess it's useful to have these reminders because, you know, you do get comfortable sometimes and you do forget, and so it's just worthwhile having these prompts. But there was a non-white female in the unit that I worked for, and I was having a conversation with her, and to be honest with you, it wasn't anything that was going to get me in trouble or anything like that. We were just having a chat, and I was asking her something personal, so I was kind of whispering, but not, as I said, it wasn't anything confidential. And then there was a woman who was sat next to her, because I was actually by the non-white female's desk at the time, and this person sat next to her was a white female, and she burst out laughing, and she turned to me, she said, oh, such and such, who was the PA to the director of the unit, just emailed her to ask what I was talking about. And I said, really? And then I started making, you know, we started laughing and joking about it. And I obviously made this PA aware that I now knew that he had actually asked the question. And I think we carried on the conversation, and what it was interesting, because the white female then said, oh no, I've probably said enough now and I've got myself in trouble. So I guess she realised that she had slipped off code by letting me know that I was under surveillance. And that surveillance thing is just deeper than we think, because I remember working on another project, and I was based outside of my main office on a particular project. So I was housed within a building where you have lots of different organizations working together on a specific project. And I had already started on the program, but my program director had started afterwards, and she had been recruited from another organization. And I guess she was being quite tough in the way that she was negotiating for the role. And even though she was responsible for my day-to-day work, my main director in the organization I was working for, who was located in the main building, was my line manager and remained my line manager. So I used to have to go to monthly meetings with her. And she basically asked me to spy on this program director because of what she'd already seen. She wasn't very comfortable with her. And this is two white women. So, you know, it wasn't a race issue, but it was just to show you exactly what goes on. And I was told that I shouldn't worry. I would be looked after. No, I wasn't going to join in this war. So I used to have to go along to the my one-to-one meetings with my director. And I used to play super dumb until she got bored, and then she stopped having these meetings with me because she knew, she realized I wasn't going to play that game. But yeah, it is a strategy. I've got a few other updates, Gus, but I'll mute my line so other people can make their comments.
Wow. Stacy in England, Friday morning, chiming in with that update. I mean, and that's spying on another white person on the job. So if you're seeing these types of things happen, if you're getting that sort of report of how they're even conducting surveillance on other race soldiers, you already know what that means for you as a nigger. And I mean, they don't even want us to have the job to begin with. So yeah, just always, I think, extremely helpful to just get those reminders. It can be so easy to think that, you know, yeah, they're not paying attention and all that. We should always err on the side of caution with regards to surveillance, that yes, they're watching us probably in a myriad of different ways, probably even got some non-white employees to keep an eye on us as well. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have commentary you want to share, line should be open. Feel free to proceed.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm a first-time caller. Good evening to everybody. Good evening to you both. I wanted to comment to anybody with young people that are entering the military or already in the military, advise them to be very good friends with the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Because I had a lot of experiences. I was actually in the Marine Corps. My first duty station was in Quantico, Virginia. I had a black female staff sergeant that basically gave me a hard time. And she told me, and I quote, it was because I was a black woman in the Marine Corps. And she tried to give me a couple non-judiciary or non, what they call NJPs, non-judiciary punishments. For like one time, I forgot to wear my glasses to a shoot. I was a photographer in the military. But later on, what my, the most troubling experience was, I'm from New Orleans, and they happened to station me in New Orleans a year before Hurricane Katrina. And so I was there the year Hurricane Katrina occurred. Because of us being stationed there, they had given us all government credit cards that allowed us to get hotels when we evacuated, which was actually a week before the residents of the city were told to evacuate. So I was able to get a hotel, and because my family basically didn't have any money, they evacuated with me to Texas, and we all lived in a hotel room together. the people over me didn't like that. And at this time, all the people over me basically were Caucasian, European Americans. So it got to a point, I guess they felt like either, I don't know, my family being with me was too much for them, and they were harassing me about it. And by that time, I had to dig into the UCMJ and go to the sergeant major that was basically like the equal opportunity person for where I was stationed. And they didn't know this. So one day I was getting ready to leave out and go pick up my son from the child care center on base. And they were like, well, hold on, you can't go anywhere yet. You have to come in here. We have something to tell you. And I went into a room, and it was like a star court or something. The sergeant was there, a corporal, who I was told by a black man that had gotten kicked out of the military. He told me they're going to promote her over you because she's white and you're not. And they did. So she was there. And also the captain. And they were like, yeah, you're being brought up on charges of disrespect to a non-commissioned officer. Because I had a little bit of a verbal dispute with the corporal that they had just promoted. Sergeant that they had just promoted. And they're like, yeah, you're being charged with disrespect. And they didn't know that I had basically put that joker on the table with going to the equal opportunity rep and letting them know, hey, I'm being harassed. This is why, et cetera, et cetera. And so because of that, I knew that. And I didn't reveal that to them. So I told him, okay, well, if that's the game we're playing, I'm going to ask for court-martial, and I'm going to see you there and you there and you there like Wizard of Oz. And by the time we get done, I'll be a private, and the captain's going to be a second lieutenant again, and the colonel's going to be a major, and the house of cards is going to fall down because you don't realize that you just made me an hour and a half late picking up my son from child care. So that means they had to call the military police. So now they're involved, and now you're going to have to answer to them for that. And then I also told them, you know, basically I'm being harassed here, and I can't remember what that article is in the uniform, not uniform commotion code, but in the UCMJ. I can't remember what it is, but I told it to them. I'm like, you're basically committing this right now. And, you know, you about to think, sink yourself. And so within 2 days, the charges went away like magic, as we would say in the Marine Corps. So yeah, I don't endorse it. Like I said, I was in the Marines. I was in 4 years. I'm out. But if you're going to go, you definitely need to delve into that, because you go from being a citizen that is being held under the Uniform Commercial Code, and then you swear in under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and that's a whole different system. And, you know, it's all under maritime law at the end of it. But if you're going to do it, you know, like Samuel L. Jackson said, don't be half stupid, be all the way stupid. And I'll end my turn for now. Thank you.
Wow. First time caller. Thank you so much for dialing in. Hope the cows has been helpful, beneficial to you. I am not just congratulations. You're being a veteran. I hope you're able to learn some constructive things during your time there and can use that constructively now that you are back to being a citizen, as they say. I don't know the technical name for the rules, code of conduct, and what have you for the Marines, but that sounds like policy and procedure, that they have some sort of manual that gives you whatever the laws are that are going to govern you while you are a soldier. And that's, I mean, for sure, that is a workplace environment if you signed up for that. Policy and procedure, really go through. And it sounds like in that situation, you're going through knowing the rules and knowing these are options that you have. If I'm being attacked, this is how I can defend myself from these charges. It sounds like it helped you in that situation. Yes.
I'm sorry, I muted the line. Yeah, it did, absolutely, because like I said, because of the fact that I was able to, for lack of a better word, trump their hand, with trying to charge me by going to the equal opportunity officer beforehand, you know, it totally, it quashed whatever they were trying to start. And then, you know, it's just after a while, it's almost like, in a way, like Paul Mooney says, you know, sometimes they look at you like, smarter than the average runaway. It was like, after a while, it was like, you know, it's not even worth trying or even thinking about throwing something on her. She's gonna know how to defend herself, and she's gonna do it because she's right, and we're gonna be wrong, and at the end of it, we're gonna embarrass ourselves. And I think that was the biggest reason why those charges went away. It was such an embarrassment that I knew how to word what they were doing, but then essentially they were attacking me because my family and we were at the time refugees. You know, they were living with me, and they were just like upset about me leveraging my ability to get a hotel for my family because I was in the Marines.
Wow. Excuse me, for people that have been listening to the Cows for a long time, know that we invested a lot of time covering Hurricane Katrina. I think we've done some of our signature work on the levee breach, the hurricane, and what happened subsequently. I mean, lots of broadcasts that we've done on the news. Speaking of surveillance, we just played, we're talking about them having all those cameras all over the place in New Orleans, surveillance. But I do not want to make sure that, you know, is minimized or lost. We have a Black mother here and a veteran who is, I think she said, to be from the New Orleans area or born in the New Orleans, Louisiana area, to be stationed there. This is my hometown, as they say. My folks, my people, my family's here, friends, people that I care about. I'm able to allow my family to evacuate, refugees, as they called them back in 05. I'm all able to allow them to stay with me, you know, perks for, I'm making the ultimate sacrifice for my country. I'm on duty, and just having my family stay with me is great. Oh my God, we got this nigga. She brought her looter family all the way out here. It's not supposed to be, we got to figure out a way to, I mean, that's the sort of tackiness. That's what I meant in that opening report when they're talking about bias. That's not bias. That is white terror. I mean, white terrorism at its worst. It's not, oh, everybody embrace what President Bush at the time, what he was saying back then. Let's show our best and let's pitch in. Americans need help. No. Why do you have those niggers, your family? Why do you have them staying? You should have left them back in the toxic sludge water back in New Orleans. I mean, that's what we're doing. That's what I'm saying. Know your policy and procedure, and don't be surprised with that sort of conduct, any of it, the false allegations, the tackiness, the total lack of concern, you, your family having a crisis. We don't care. We care about practicing white supremacy and terrorizing Black people at all times, flood water or no. Other folks, thank you so much, first time caller. If we have folks, if you have comments on what's been shared thus far, if you have your own situation you want to discuss, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. This is a 10th deal here, and I'm currently somewhere in Los Angeles. And I just wanted to congratulate the previous caller for being able to successfully defend themselves from white terrorism on the job. Be advised that all of the situations that we are talking about, they are meant to terrorize you. When you lose a job, when you are fired, or when you have to make some sort of adjustment, at an old company that I worked at, a company called, it's one of the major companies that sends out communications about new job opportunities. So at this company, they did a study, and they found that losing a job and searching for a new one is rated more anguishing by people than losing a grandparent. Keep that in mind. And also, every single time that you go into these work situations, you go into these office situations, and they have you behaving very carefully around them. They have you being forced to have your senses on alert. All of these feelings that you get are governed by hormones, and I think it's cortisol. That is the stress hormone that is released by your body. And when you have an overload of cortisol in your system and in your brain, this can raise your blood pressure and ultimately shorten your life, cause heart disease. It's basically the hormone that is related to stress and chronic stress, stressful situations. So just be advised that, you know, you might be best served looking for opportunities that are away from suspected white supremacists. In my current, I have a few jobs that I currently have at this moment, and I've made sure that all of them involve as minimal contact with suspected racists as possible. I found that the common denominator in all of the bad work situations that I've had, the common denominator is that there has been a presence of suspected white supremacists that are there, that are concerned with making my experience at that workplace as difficult as possible. And getting away from them definitely improves just my overall sense of well-being, my ability to focus, concentrate, and even perform the tasks that are assigned to me at these various positions that I have. You know, it's way easier to execute than if I was at an office, forced to dress a certain way, forced to act a certain way, forced to tolerate the stare and the gaze of some manager who's flexing their ability to control and to dominate another person. Just working remotely has definitely alleviated a lot of that. So just be advised that all of those situations are adversely affecting your health. Being in those constant situations can shorten your lifespan. And, you know, with a shorter life, you have less opportunity to fight these white supremacists tooth and nail. And also, I'm just going to finish by saying, update your LinkedIn. Update your LinkedIn. There's no checks for whatever you put on your LinkedIn. You can say whatever you want on your LinkedIn. That can, if you're crafty enough, you can find yourself in a new line of work if you like, with a few simple edits. I'll go ahead and mute my line at this time. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. They were making the same point that Mr. Steele just brought up about making sure that your LinkedIn page is updated, and just with the words are so important. Talk about that on the program all the time. They made the exact same point with just the words that you use and how you craft your statements for your resume or your cover letter for what you have on your LinkedIn page, that can have a huge impact on what employers see and if they are interested in, you know, picking you up for a job. Did you have something you wanted to add, Mr. Steele?
Yeah. One of the positions that I've landed recently, very, very, I mean, the money that they're paying me is, it's situation changing. And that was secured because they found me on a Boolean search that the recruiter made for a certain position that I specifically tailored my resume to appeal to. So, if you find out what job that you're looking for and what what the person who does what you would like to do, what they do and how they craft their LinkedIn, you can craft a similar LinkedIn, and you can learn to speak to an experience if you don't have that experience, or you can just, you know, if you've always said, hey, I could be the manager, hey, you could be the manager if you really know how to speak to the experiences of management. So keep your LinkedIn up to date, and finally tune it to what it is that you exactly want or close to it.
I think that's a great suggestion as well. Look at some other people. Look at their LinkedIn pages. People that have jobs that you would like, are in careers that you would like. Look at their pages. See if you have any tips or suggestions. Just the wording that they use and how they craft their statements, what have you, could provide some tips that are helpful. If we have other folks, if you have a hand up and we've not heard from you at all, if you have commentary on anything that's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation you want to discuss, proceed.
Yes, this is Big Victim from Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, greetings, sir.
They are selling my plantation, the trucking division of where I'm presently working at. They are selling the trucking division. I was walking around confused to find out, to get some information of what's going on with the sale. So I proceeded to ask other victims, and I started thinking, well, they victims, they don't know nothing. So I proceeded to ask some suspected white racists, and I said to myself, well, they could be lying to me. So I just sat back and listened to my ancestors, and I just said that they said, well, you're being sold off. They sold to another family, a trucking family. I heard some figures of the sale. Now, this is a company with about 150 trucks. Off the 150 trucks, they made about, I think the figure was $200 million just off 150 trucks. So, I had to sign all over my paperwork, had to come in my insurance and everything. I had to sign everything over to the other company. And so far in the sale of the company, I'm going to get a raise, and they got a better 401k match, and it's going smooth so far. And graduation season is coming up. If you have any young people that's graduating high school, I would suggest to get a trade. With the prices of college that's out there right now, it's like buying a house after you do your 4 years of college. So I would suggest recommend to the young people out there, check into a trade, you know, a skill, something you can learn is going to make you money right off the top. It's about $4,000. You can go to a school. They're going to charge you about $4,000. Go to truck driving school, or you can go to some companies. They pay for your tuition and everything to learn how to drive a truck, but you got to sign a contract with the company for about a year, sometimes two, and stay there, learn the road, learn how to drive the truck. And you come out the gate making money. So I just wanted to share that to the fellow victims. Thanks for letting me share.
Appreciate that, Big Victim in Alabama. They just had a report on NPR. I think it was yesterday. If it wasn't yesterday, it was within the last 48 hours. They just had a report on NPR. It was saying that exactly, that there are lots and lots of jobs, or sizable number of jobs with a good amount of demand, where you could start right out of high school if you have a trade. And they had, of course. And in fact, they were doing the report here in Seattle. I heard this on the National Public Radio, NPR, but they do have their affiliates, and they were reporting here in Seattle, and they were talking to a white person, of course, and whatever, I think he was talking, exact story that Big Victim just laid out, the whole college thing cost a lot of money, he didn't like it, blah, 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 he's probably an opioid addict, that's big for the whites here in Seattle. He said, forget that, dropped out of college, Edward Snowden, and did the trade school thing, and now he's got a job, he's about to make something close to six figures, actually. But they were saying, I will post that clip, I'll play it next week, because they were just talking, exactly, Big Victim was right in line with what they were talking about this week. Do we have other folks who had either commentary on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation that you want to discuss, line should be open. Proceed. While folks are spectating, I do want to make sure that I emphasize what I've said consistently, Area 8 being easily the area that I have found Cal's listeners to be most excited about, and generally across the board, with non-white people, black people, doesn't matter. Area 8 tends to get lots of folks very excited. Just strikes me as something being very incorrect to have more excitement, enthusiasm to talk about white supremacy in porn as opposed to white supremacy in employment, labor. I think the latter is substantially, like, not even close with regards to which is a greater priority. But that's just me. We had another person who wrote in their commentary, the VA area again. This person, they wanted to be referenced, non-white female, counter-racist wife and mom from the DMV. Commentary. I've been working in a very large museum for the past 7 years. My degrees and experience have all been in the art and museum field. However, whatever I do right now while at the institution I want to work in is not relevant to my area of interest expertise. Recently, a position opened up in the department where my experience lies, and I applied. The position, however, seems to be reserved for another individual since the posting was very short, 1 week opening for people to apply, only available to internal applicants, and asked for a very specific combination of experience that few would have. Even I only met 3 out of the 4 criteria. Just wanted to insert really quick, this is one of the ways that whites practice white supremacy racism with regards to employment. Many of the jobs that are open, they are not publicly broadcasted. I think lots of, or I hope lots of folks are aware of this, but yeah, they don't even post all of these. This is, I have a friend and my cousin and whatever. I mean, you wouldn't even have a notion of a lot of the jobs that are available, and they do things like this deliberately so that it's very short notice. If you don't look within those 5 days, missed it, should have been more alert. Continuing, these are all typical signs that management already has someone in mind for the position, but must go through the formality of opening it up to all eligible applicants. I just found out this week my application made the short list, and it was passed along for further consideration. Since I'm already an internal employee, I'm able to get a bit more information about the position by discreetly asking around and or looking at our internal directory for information about the makeup of the department. I learned through some research that the position is in an office filled with all white men, and I, as a black female in her early 40s, would be responsible for managing approximately 5 white men varying in age age from mid-20s to late 50s. Additionally, if I were to be selected, I would likely be taking the position away from one of those men. To give a bit more information, this particular department is part of a larger department that is also made up of all white people, but a mix of men and women. While I have not been called about an interview yet, I hope to have an idea of the types of questions I should ask at the interview, since I would also likely be speaking to other white people. Furthermore, if I am offered the position, how would callers recommend I handle this position? I haven't heard from many black female callers saying that they manage white men and wondered if there are any out there that could provide some insight or offer some advice. Do we have any black females? Well, I guess if we have any black people, period, who manage white people, that might be helpful. But specifically, black females in management position where you're having to supervise white males, if you have any suggestions for how you deal with that situation or what your experience has been. I know I've talked to black females who've been in that situation before, and some of the things that I've heard consistently them undermining what that black quote unquote manager is attempting to do, not listening to them, just generally being insubordinate, racist, and challenging their authority in ways that they previously had not been doing when it was a white person who had that supervisor position, those types of things, and figuring out how to deal with and minimize that sort of behavior, and having that person even going above them to report and try to get them in trouble. Those are some of the things that I, like I said, just standard racist behavior where they're resentful. I can't believe this Negro is, you know, telling me what to do. If we had folks who had suggestions on the supervising aspect or the question asking aspect for the interview in terms of what types of questions you would ask. I was thinking about training. I always think it's so critical in work situations, particularly for black people, because we get inferior training or no training at all so regularly. I think Thomas in New York even talked about how he was given such poor training on the job. The white woman acted like she didn't want to do it at all when he was starting a new position. And that's so common, that's so predictable to ask about what sort of training will be available to the successful candidate to ensure that they, you know, can be really, really efficient and effective in this position. I was thinking about that, but I don't know, a management position, they might, but I feel like, yeah, they have training for managers. I think people in management, they get training. I always think it's good to ask about training for black people in a workplace situation. So if we have any folks who have either potential questions to ask for the interview.
Can I be heard?
Thomas in New York.
Yes. As far as, good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers. As far as the interview, I don't know how to quite word it offhand, but I would indicate that something to the effect of what type of authority will I have over these people that I'll be managing. I know that you probably can't say, well, I'm black and I'm, you know, managing these white men and, you know, they might undermine me. But it has to be a way that could be worded in a way where you're saying it without saying it. I'm quite sure they would get it because I have worked in jobs in the past that had a black female supervisor, and once those white males undermine her, then usually typically the black males do too. Well, all people do once they see that the white males get away with it. So I would ask, you know, exactly what type of authority will I have over these people? Will I have the authority to get rid of people who's not going along with the program that I'm laying out? And things of that nature. And I did have something to say about the guy who was talking about truck driving.
Oh, okay. I'll make sure we get that in. We have any other folks who either have questions to ask for the interview, or if you are a black female, or I guess anybody in general, but specifically, it would be nice if we have any black females. Don't be a spectator. If we have any black females, if you've had to supervise white men, what that experience was like, either of those, that would be grand.
Hi, Gus.
Stacy in the UK, still hanging with us.
Just to speak to that caller's or the person who wrote in questions. In terms of experience, as has been said, be prepared to be undermined, for them to lie about you, i.e. my experience, where they can accuse you of shouting at them, and going above your head and telling you that, you know, they don't do X, Y, Z. And it's interesting, actually, because as Thomas in New York just said, I remember working on a particular project where actually this, I wasn't directly line managing, but I had oversight of various programs. And so other teams and what they did or aspects of what they did. And yes, they do undermine. And I actually did have a black male who was working on my team who I did a lot to support, who then decided to join in and undermine me. So you do, you really do get those dynamics. But and in terms of perhaps the phrasing of the question that Thomas asked, maybe not asking about authority directly or using that wording, because then they'll just see you as somebody who's just going to be a problem. But you could probably ask around sort of areas of development for the team and where they see the challenges, and what areas of support are needed, because that will then start to answer some of the questions and it'll give you a sense of the dynamics in that team and what they might expect of you in that process or going forward. But actually, to be honest with you, I was listening to the sort of overview of what she was saying, and that whole week's notice for the position, those sorts of things happen over here as well. But I mean, she's done an incredible amount of research, but, and I'm not suggesting that she doesn't go for the job, but sometimes we really do have to ask the question, do we want that job? With everything that she laid out there, I would expect problems. Now, if you're going to go for the job, and I think this is where we do fall down as well as non-white people, is that we go into particular positions and we're really pleased to have that position. But few of us have a career plan and a career strategy. And so if you do go in for that job, what I've observed is that, and if you are successful, what I've observed in many white colleagues is that they have a plan. So they might get that particular job, but as soon as they get it, they're planning for their next one. So if she is successful, I would expect problems, so I would be very codified in how I approach it. But I would also do as much as I can so that I can get what I need to move on to my next role, because that sounds like it's going to be a stressful situation. I'll mute my line.
Great.
Quick question. Was
Proceed, Mr. Steele.
Yeah, quick question. Was there a question about what question to ask during the interview when they say, do you have any questions?
Yes.
You know, very interesting that, you know, that question came up today. I was reading an article either on CNBC.com or on Harvard Business Review, two publications that I think that anybody who, you know, is in the workforce, especially in an office capacity, I think that you should just subscribe to them on Facebook. I think that the articles that both of these outlets share are good to share amongst your teams. A lot of them are just very beneficial in an office-like setting. So anything that you share from those pages are going to be seen as beneficial by most suspected white supremacists that you're going to see, you're going to be forced to work with on the job. But they had a specific article, either one of those pages had an article about this question, and the suggestion that they had was ask the question, the five last people who had this position, what are they doing now? That's one of the questions that they suggested to ask. And I think that that's a pretty effective question that they said that will stump your interviewer. And apparently, I didn't even know that the objective of that part of the interview was to I didn't know that that was one of the things that they were looking for. But, yeah, if you can ask a question like that, another question that I like to ask are, what are some challenges that the previous people in this position faced? And then you'll get a good picture of what kind of difficulties that you may run into on the job. Now, you have to understand and listen to how they describe these situations, because oftentimes they're not going to explicitly say, oh, you know, we deal with a very racist customer base or something like that, or, the last person is suing us for sexual harassment. You know, they won't say things like that, but you may get some pretty useful insights by just asking about the previous people at that position. Ask about that, ask about the position, and ask about the history of the position. And if you're at a loss for, you know, what to ask, you know, ask your interviewer, what school they went to. Oftentimes that's just a nice, where'd you go to school? Okay, and then you can go talking from there. Now, I've had that conversation turn poor when I asked, where did you go to school? And then the person said, oh, I went to U of I. Oh, I went to MSU. Oh, MSU is great. Yeah, I went to U of I, the Fighting Illini. They took away our mascot. We can't celebrate anymore like we used to. And that's what the interviewer is telling me. And as he's going through all of this, you know, I guess that my face must have changed, because his face is changing as he realizes that he's, you know, going into a racist diatribe, and I'm, I guess, mortified, and I didn't get that position. So maybe you might want to stay away from that question, what school you went to, but at the same time, that's just, you know, one of those questions that, one of those opportunities that you have to kind of maybe build some rapport with the person that you're interviewing with. So, that's my answer to the question, you know, what questions did you ask? Do you have any questions for us? Also, never say no questions. Never say that. Don't ever, even if the interview was 2 hours long, don't say no questions. You know, don't say, oh, it was pretty thorough, our discussion. So, you know, I'm pretty satisfied. I found out everything I need to know. No, at that point, then, you know, just inquire about, okay. What schools you go to.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Steele. Great questions to ask. Something so innocuous as what school did you go to? And even there, we trail off into racism, white supremacy. We had to place our mascot. Got so many racist mascots that have bitten the dust. I did want to make sure I don't get this in before I forget. Big Victim, when he said that he went, I guess, to ask a suspected racist whether or not, or just to get information about the sale of the company, and he said that the person responded and said, "You've been sold." I don't know if he said it exactly that way, if those were his exact words, but if they were, that's the sort of thing I would register, even if you don't document and put it down. I mean, this person might be leaving if the company's been sold, but that to me just has some very plantational overtones, having a white person telling a black person, "Oh yeah, you've been sold." Context.
Excuse me.
Oh, do we have?
I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Did you have another announcement?
Identification, context of white supremacy. And we were, even though I got that aside and just to make sure I didn't forget, we were dealing with the questions for the interview, black females who supervised white males, or if we have black people in general who've had to supervise whites.
Oh, it was a quick comment about asking people about where they went to school. Later on, once I was out of the military, I found myself in a series of temp jobs for graphic design, which I ultimately went to school and got my bachelor's for. And I was at a company that basically manufactures different medical supplies for hospitals and like common stuff like for Band-Aid, et cetera. So the lady that was over basically the publishing and the packaging department, I was quite curious on what her education was, because, you know, I found myself very depressed. I was in this, what felt like and was, a dead-end job, temp job, not quite doing graphic design, but then at times, you know, being pulled apart to do graphic design, but not getting the pay that was equivalent for it. So I'm like, you know, I have military experience. I have a bachelor's. I've freelanced for a major radio station. Like, what am I missing that she has where she got to be creative director? So when we were on break, I asked her, I said, hey, where'd you get your master's from? I assumed she had a master's. She said, master's? And she was like, and this was a European American. And she was like, oh, no, I don't have a master's. I have an associate. And I was like, oh, I just, my heart like dropped into my shoes. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, this lady is making like at least $90,000 a year. And she only has an associate. And I have military experience, a bachelor's, and, you know, other experience outside of that. I just couldn't believe it. And like asking that question, it does, it reveals a lot. I also wanted to say one other thing to the gentleman
Is this related to interview supervising white people?
I was thinking about the question about asking people where they went to school.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I kind of hung on to that.
Because I want to make sure we address that, and then we can move back if people have other things, or if you want to address some of the other questions, just to make sure we kind of stay focused with where we were. Definitely appreciate it. And I mean, that's cliche. The system of white supremacy. My qualifications are, I'm classified as white, and that's that. Did we have people who had either questions for the interview, right? Or if you are a black female and you have experience having to supervise white men, I reckon it would also be probably applicable if you are a black person and you've had to supervise whites, period. If we have folks who have suggestions, thoughts on that, that would be grand.
Hi, guys.
Yes, ma'am. Stacey in the UK.
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to come back on a couple of things that Mr. Steele said. Obviously, VGQ. But I would just be cautious about asking questions that stump the interviewer. I guess you do want to be able to assess whether the job and the environment is right for you. But I would be careful in terms of how I ask those questions, because, you know, I think some of these articles that we read are great, but they may not be written for non-white people in mind. So what some people can get away with doing in an interview setting, we might not. And you don't want to come across as somebody who is going to give the interviewer a hard time if you are ever appointed in that role. But that doesn't mean to say you don't ask probing questions, but also you want the job, so you're trying to give the best impression, and I'm not sure that stumping the interviewer is the best impression, because that's just you know, that's not necessarily about getting the job. That might just be fun if you're interviewing for the sake of interviewing, but is that going to really be productive in terms of getting the job itself? And then the other thing that was worth thinking about, and I don't know so much about the US setting, but I do believe it was Mr. Steele who maybe over a year ago talked about interview practice and just being able to give examples of the work that you've done. And in the UK now, certainly in certain types of roles, we have a lot of behavioural or situational types of questions that ask you to basically tell a story about when you were in this particular position and you came across this scenario. How did you deal with it? And what did you learn from that situation and the impact that it had? So I guess thinking about the way in which you're able to craft a story that's going to sell you in the best light against the key competencies. And just linking back to what Mr. Steele said, it was a while ago, but I remember it stuck into my mind. those behavioral type questions, I do think they are putting on white people at a disadvantage, because when we move to the area of communications and how we're supported and developed, that storytelling, and I guess even linking back to some of the comments that were being made in the clip about the sort of confidence to really sell yourself, it is an art, and I don't think we're necessarily taught how to do that. So it can stomp a lot of competent people in an interviewing process. So I would just maybe YouTube, look at examples of people who've done situational or behavioural interviews, just to get a sense of how you can craft scenarios respond to those scenario type questions. And I'll make my line, guys.
Appreciate that, Stacey.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for taking my call. This is Red in Nevada. Just to answer the questions about the email, I've never been like a supervisor or a manager or anything like that. But what I would suggest, especially if she's going to have to possibly manage white males, suspected white supremacists, to definitely, if she does get the job, to always just keep reflecting back on policies and procedures, especially if they're not doing something right. I know she said it was something to do with a museum setting. So even if, let's say, it's like with an acquisition, and if they have certain terms of how they go out and acquire pieces, and if they're not following that right, then if she does have to correct them, just always bring it back to, policies and procedures, and try to, and I don't know if maybe there's going to be like an office, but I remember before on one workplace racism episode or show, what have you, there was, I think it might have been like a black, someone was telling a story about a black male supervisor, just in basically how he had to try to navigate managing suspected white supremacist women. So just maybe just keeping your door open, or making sure, but like still kind of speaking low or something like that, to where it's not so much putting you in a very vulnerable position with these white men. Then also, as far as maybe like the questions, I've heard to kind of ask questions, so maybe somewhat more of detailed about the job duties, and then kind of work in how your past experience would then relate to those job duties. That might actually help too, because maybe that'll show them that, you know, you have done, if you have like a list of the job duties, which I'm like was told that you had already researched, that that'll maybe kind of let them know that you are actually committed to that position, and then try to work in, like I said, how the past experience relates to those current job duties. I don't know if I can share my experience now, or I can wait till later if somebody else had a comment. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Red in Nevada. We have other suggestions on what our caller that wrote in, questions for the interview, or having to supervise white men. Do we have any more suggestions for that?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Well, I can answer that question. That's with
your audio is a little distorted. It's kind of hard to hear you.
Can you hear me now?
That's better. Yes, sir.
Hello. I would want to supervise no white folks. They ain't gonna listen to you. Down here in the South, no. Down here in Alabama, I very rarely seen that. Where you had I had a black supervisor when I was out there working in just working a regular 9-to-5. That's been years. I don't know. Things have changed now. I don't know. I'm getting up and down the road in the truck, but when I was out there working, that's that when I did a year during my suspension when I got a DUI. I was working construction, and it was still the same. White folks was supervising the victims, and that was it. Well, I'm from down in the South. I don't know how it is out in California or New York, but down here in the South, I wouldn't want to supervise no white folks. It'd be a bunch of confusion. It's confusion supervising victims. Thank you for letting me share.
Yes, sir. Appreciate that. Victim in Alabama. We did just see, hang on 1 second. We did just see Obama in the White House. That might count as supervising. The person who wrote this in is in the DMV area. So I don't know if that counts as the South. That's kind of on the threshold, although it is below the Mason-Dixon line. And I also think it's important, this person working in the field, this is at a museum, I think they said. These are probably some extremely refined racists. Like, you are not just going to find the typical, they might be opioid users, but the typical white person that you would just bump into on the street is not going to be working at a museum. Particularly, this sounds like upper level at the museum. Like, I would expect these to be some pretty informed, refined, skilled white supremacists who are in this position that you would be working with and supervising. Not saying not to do it, but just that is definitely something that should be kept in mind. Did we have anyone? We heard Mr. Steele hang tight. Did we have any other folks who had a question or a suggestion on interview questions supervising white men? Everybody got in all their suggestions on this one? Grant. Let's see. We will. Mr. Steele, if you have a quick comment, if it's wrapping the caller that wrote in, if it's concise, and then we'll get Red in Nevada if you want to give your personal anecdote. Mr. Steele? Uh-oh. You still there, Mr. Steele?
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Regarding managing suspected white supremacists, any situation that you find yourself in the plantation, you're going to be at the behest of white supremacists. You're going to be subject to their will. The higher up you go, I've found that what benefits is learning exactly what the rules are in that position and then finding a higher authority to defer to. So when you're trying to manage these suspected white supremacists, it's not your authority that they're answering to. It's the authority that's above you that they're answering to. It's the authority above you that is making them do all of these requests. Always, oh man, I hate to do this. I hate to manage. I hate to do, oh my gosh. But it was told to me by the higher ups that you have to do X, Y, and Z. You know, it's a direct order from above that, hey, you're to do X, Y, and Z. So always just understand that as a victim, you're never in control. You're always going to be acting as a spokesperson or as a viceroy to some higher authority that is likely going to be another white supremacist or white supremacist suspect. So, are you in more danger the higher you go in management? No, I don't think so. And I think a DGQ is in order. I would try to get as high as I can, get that on my resume, get at least a year or 2 years in that position, and then try to do that same position at another firm at a higher level, and then rinse and repeat 2 years at a time, 2 years at a time. Don't try to stay long. Don't think that you're going to be at any position for 20 years. Don't be loyal to any of these companies. Just keep advancing. And even if you're bad at your job, if you keep advancing, you will advance and you will continue to make money.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele, or at least that's the hope. Continue to advance and make money. Racists certainly have other plans. Red in Nevada, did you want to share your personal situation?
Yes, thank you for allowing me to speak again. And actually, it was quite interesting that Mr. Steele said that, because I was having a discussion with a victim of white supremacy. I'm sure he doesn't consider himself that, but he's not quite as confused. But he's someone who's involved with like upper management. But he was actually telling me that with certain industries, they do expect you to move around, which is something that he, you know, he shared about his own experience. And he had said that even in the hiring, with him being someone who hires other people, they will kind of look at you if you are trying to stay in the same position with certain industries, like especially like digital industries, if you're trying to stay in that same position for more than a couple of years, like 2 to 4 years, they're either going to want you to seek promotion, or they might try to get rid of you, which I thought was very interesting, because just thinking about the information that like my older family members have told me to like stay on jobs as long as possible. But he's like, no, that's not, it's kind of changed. So I just thought that was a really, really unique insight. So definitely something that Mr. Steele just echoed. But my situation was like last week, I think I said about how my manager was just saying all these nice things or whatever. And basically what I was saying, because I've been saying that I do need help because I feel like I'm not meeting the business standard. Just kept saying, you know, I'll get you some help. I ended up speaking to a non-white person at the job, someone who's been there for a little while. And he was able to go to my supervisor. I asked him if he could go to my supervisor and just, you know, ask if he could, you know, offer me some one-on-one help, which she did oblige to. But that actually happened recently. But prior to that, when I kept asking her, because I've been asking her for a couple of weeks for some help, and she said, you know, I'm trying to, you know, go through different things to make sure I get you the help, and still not happening. So I don't sit that far away from like where, you know, she holds her little one-on-one meetings with other employees. And like, so when she, and during our meeting, she said, you know, you're new, it'll take some time for you to get to the business standard. That's what she has been constantly repeating to me. But then when I overheard her speaking to a white woman who's also new, she was like, well, you know, you do need to, you know, bring your numbers to the level of the business standard. And I just thought that was really interesting, because I'm like, well, is this kind of like trying to set me up for failure? Like you're telling me that, oh, well, I have time, but you're also telling this other white woman that, no, you maybe want to try to meet the business standard. Now with a white woman, I'm not quite sure, because we don't really work the same schedules. I barely see that person, but I don't know if she's maybe gotten help or not, but I know other people on the team, white and non-white, have gotten help. It's just been like, I've been just really having to try to keep constantly bringing it up. Hey, I need some help, because I don't want it to be, you know, I can't keep using this whole I'm new excuse when, you know, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months in, whatever, after, you know, out of whatever period, grace period they have new people in. So I just thought that was really interesting, and I don't really know what to make of it. So, but I'm still just basically doing self-correcting, since it doesn't seem like I'm still kind of getting the help, just truly trying to make sure I just go over the policies and procedures myself. But I guess that's all I'll share for this week. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that, Red, in Nevada. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. And that sort of example, that's why I said before about training, the caller in the DMV area who asked about questions, where I said maybe to ask about what sort of training is available, because that's standard operating procedure where you don't get trained adequately. You start a new job, And they don't want to give you training. They don't want to help you out so that you can, you know, learn everything adequately well the first time around. And then you can perform the job well because you got all the information you needed when you started. We talked about that consistently. And I hope that you have been documenting your requests for assistance, if they've been shabby about it or, you know, slow in getting you the help that you need. But I would, I think it's correct to think absolutely that they are not going to say, oh, well, you know, Red, you're a new employee. They are not going to have that sort of sympathy, certainly not the type of sympathy that you would get if you were white. And I think that they probably told the suspected racist white woman, in terms of, well, you know, go ahead and get your numbers up to the industry standard, they probably gave her the correct information. I think what they, or at least the pattern that I've observed frequently with black people, non-white employees, they'll tell us, oh, yeah, exactly what she's, oh, yeah, it's, you know, it's no problem. You just started, you know, you got time. So, again, then you get in the performance, well, I don't know, your numbers are a little low and we thought you were going to get it together, but, and that'll be the, I've seen that time after time after time. So I think it's always better to not be thinking that, oh yeah, I'm going to have time and they're going to be patient with me, to not be thinking that way at all, to really try to be as proactive as you can, getting assistance, learning. We talked about that consistently, learning as much as you possibly can that will help you do your job efficiently, effectively, asking for training. All of those things I think are huge and things that apply across the board, because there's so many black people that run into these types of problems in the workplace. Did folks have commentary either on Red's situation, things we've discussed already? If we have folks who haven't talked at all and they want to share about their personal situation, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say that I'm a first-time caller, and I love your show, and I wish I had heard about, you know, your show when I was working on a previous job. I really don't want to get into action about it right now, but I just wanted to, you know, just let you know that your show has been very beneficial, and I find it, I've been listening to all of your programs with different guests, and I think dealing with workplace racism is very important. Had I known half of the stuff that I'm learning now, I think I would have panned out a lot better than, you know, I did. I recently just lost a job, and I definitely suspect it was due to workplace racism. I'm having to deal with a lot of situations with that right now, but that's all I really wanted to say at this point. And, you know, thanks again, Gus, for having this forum.
Spectacular. I hope the cows has been worthy of your time and energy. We had two first-time callers today, right on, workplace racism. Still had more enthusiasm when we were talking about pornography on Tuesday, but be that as it may, we all get the information when we do. That's why I've said, you know, hey, I would have been in a better situation, I think most of us, if we'd had this information earlier, but trying to correct that as best we can in the system of white supremacy. We had other people who wrote in as well, so I'm going to try and get these in as we get our callers as well. One person who wrote in, speaking of Area 8, this is a black female, this white man at my job who has been sexually harassing me and has come to a point of stalking me is a mastermind of deception. Today is Bring Your Kids to Work Day, and he showed up with his kids. It's my belief he used his kids as a distraction to his behavior because his kids put him in good graces while I started getting attacked for every little thing, such as going to the bathroom on my break. Anyhow, the moment all the children were taken away to do festivities, he came over to my cubicle and started spying on me again. I think someone just said something about surveillance. I went downstairs, and as usual, he was following me and watching and seeing who I was talking to. I had to step away from my desk, and when I came back, I saw him blatantly looking for me at my desk. He even checked under it. That scared the crap out of me. This man, a couple months ago, used to put his hands on my shoulders, and I would advise him not to do that. It would not be unadvised. I'm interrupting here. It would be, do not ever touch me as long as I work here, as long as you work here. Do not ever place your hands on me. Words are important. It would not be advised about any sort of touching in the workplace. I wouldn't care if that was the CEO of the company. Continuing. He then kept putting his hands on my arms, and I was clearly uncomfortable. I reported it to HR, but HR, just to sum it up, told me to F off. Then I would be curious, like, words are very important. Like, exactly what did they say? Because that might be the type of thing. I mean, Bill Cosby got convicted today. Gee whiz. Like, oh, write that down. Exactly what did they say when you reported this? Then they send a broadcast email about sexual harassment to protect the white people there. Everything this man does is premeditated, as he developed this reputation at work where people feel bad and empathize with him based on pure stereotypes. My reputation at work is terrible because I make it clear I will not come in on Monday and perform. If people could watch their background noise, if you could use your mute button.
No,
trying to,
but I mean, you feel better now?
No. If you could, again, use your mute button, that would be super appreciated. That way I don't have to stop and be interrupted by random. Speaking of tomfoolery. So I'll start that sentence over. My reputation at work is terrible because I make it clear I will not come in on Monday and perform tomfoolery for my white coworkers who think talking to black people should be the same as going to the circus. My white boss just went on an attacking spree against me. She blatantly chastised me for things she does not approach my white coworkers with. She told me today they will be monitoring me. I thought they were already doing that. I asked her if they will monitor everyone else. Good question. And she ignored me. Good thing I wrote and recorded everything. Wow. Wow. Just that last portion alone. If you have a recording of them saying we're going to be monitoring you, and you ask, is anyone else here going to be subjected to monitoring? And you don't get an answer, like, wow, I don't know what state you're in, the recording laws and what have you. But I mean, that I would definitely make note of that. The sexual, or I guess even going back to all of this other stuff, any of the shenanigans at work, bring your children. I'm not participating in any of that. My children have school. I mean, that's, for me, that would be a no-brainer. School is extremely important. I take school very seriously, and I do not think that this is serious enough to warrant jeopardizing my child's academic performance. Next, with this guy, sexual predator and race soldier, doing all of this, he brought his racist children in. That distracted people's attention or whatever happened, and then he comes back, and it's just following you around. I don't know if he's assigned to monitor you or if this is acceptable, but I would definitely inquire, is this acceptable behavior in the workplace, to have employees stalking someone throughout the building and searching for you if you're not there? I would definitely ask about that sort of behavior. It seems like you're in a work environment where they're not responsive to you. And I think we talked about that before too. If you're being sexually harassed and it's seeming like the folks there are not responsive, like, safety. If you're being harassed, and I think you wrote in before this person, you wrote in before about this sexual predator stalking you and putting his hands on you. And I think some of this was even outside the immediate building, the workplace, the facility where she works at. Man, I'm not even sure if this is, you know, talk about long term, if this is a place that you want to be long term, but at least for the immediate future, safety, anything like that, where you've got following, unwanted touching, safety. This is a safety concern, extremely dangerous. This might be another situation where you might want to have mirrors up at your terminal or your work area so that you can see if people are trying to sneak up on you or get to some spot where they can just look over your shoulder just to be more aware about what's happening in your workplace. It just sounds like such a dangerous environment. Everything would be focused on safety getting out as soon as possible. I would definitely ask if he is, or anyone, it doesn't even have to be personal to him, anyone is, that's acceptable. That's acceptable company policy to stalk, follow an employee throughout the building. You don't have a question. You don't need them. You just want to track their activities while they're on the premises. Is that in alignment with company policy? And I would check policy and procedure about that myself to see if they had, because that seems like something that could fall under harassment. Did anybody have any thoughts, black female person who wrote in last commentary? But folks have to think about that one for a while. If people do think, and you have suggestions on that one, definitely chime in, because that is a dangerous situation, in my view. Do we have folks? Oh, Stacey in the UK.
Yeah, sorry. I was just wondering as I was listening to that. If the supervisor called her in to suggest that she was monitoring her after she made the complaint to HR about the sexual harassment, I'm just really interested in the timing on that, particularly as she was saying she didn't get a great response from HR in the first place. If she has not done so already, I would suggest she does a retrospective email to HR about the conversation that she had with them around the sexual harassment, and just specifically dating when she had that conversation with them. So just make the point of putting the date of that meeting that they had in there. Because, I mean, the two might be unrelated, but it just sounds a bit convenient that they're now monitoring her after she's made a complaint about sexual harassment. I mean, if he's stalking and doing things like that, then I would go and talk to law enforcement, quite frankly, because if your employers are not taking it seriously, then that doesn't mean to say you don't have other remedies. I'll mute my line, Gus.
Great point about the dates. In fact, as Stacey was speaking, I was thinking the same thing about enforcement officials might need to be contacted. I'm not speaking against it. I'm just saying that I do remember we had a caller recently who did contact the enforcement officials. She was being harassed by an employee. I think it was a black male, black female, was being harassed by a black male. Racists were behind this too, but he like bumped her, pushed her in the hallway. She contacted enforcement officials, and it seemed that whites were very upset about that. That is something to consider. Even when you're the victim of violence in the workplace, being terrorized, even if it's physical abuse, even then, this is stalking, even then, you know, if you contact enforcement officials, racists might feel like, you know, who are you to, you know, call in some outside authority to govern what's happening here? This is, you know, my plantation and, you know, that sort of thing. So could be additional retaliation, just something to think about. Do we have any other suggestions for the caller who wrote in? Listener who wrote in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I just came to be able to tune in, so I just about missed everything up until now as far as any questions that may be asked, but I did hear the last request. I would say preparedness is vitally important because predators have a tendency of being very knowledgeable of what they can do and what they can get away with. And they are very skilled in practicing intimidation to make their victims cower and feel that they have no recourse to whatever form of mistreatment that they are going to hand out. So being prepared is a defensive weapon to their activity. So if you have the chance, as you're getting the job, to be aware of the rules be aware of what you can say and do to prevent someone from making you a victim, in the process. It may not stop them, but they will probably go somewhere else. Because one thing about a predator, they do have a keen sense of knowing the person that they can take advantage of. And they know also whether it's a white person or a non-white person on who to don't mess with or be reluctant to mess with that person. I found that out. I don't want to go into the sex thing where females are normally softer, because I've seen different. I've seen some females on the job that I was on for 2.5 years that you better not mess with as far as that concerned. So I do know that a black female, if she puts her mind and a mind towards it, can reduce, of course, under the system of racist white supremacy. We can't think that we're going to eliminate all of these problems, but we certainly can reduce them for ourselves individually and therefore collectively by just by being prepared. And I keep saying it over and over again, let that person know from day one. There's so many untold words. I know I'm saying it in a hard way, but you can be very courteous, but at the same time, be very stern that basically I don't play that. And that would cut down about 90% of your problems of someone predicting you in some sort of way, sexual, or trying to intimidate you in some kind. They will go somewhere else. They'll go find somewhere else, somebody else that they can mistreat. In most cases, there's enough people that they can do that to where they will avoid you. And hopefully I made some sense. Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. We've had quite a few other black females on the program. Allison Manswell, she wrote the book Listen Up. It's about workplace racism. Explicitly, she's been a guest on the program. Kathy Harris, she also wrote a book about workplace racism, guest on the program, talked about her time at TSA. Both of them said that they carried themselves, and when they go out and give talks on workplace racism, they encourage other black people and black females specifically to do the same thing, to carry themselves that, hey, you do not have one time to put a hand on me, to touch me, any unwanted touch, none of that. The first time, Walter Beach III said, cut it off at the knees. The first time, this is not going to get started. And I know that can be difficult. We talked about this before, like adjusting and getting that code if you haven't had that sort of information before. But I mean, it can send a huge signal. I think racists, they can recognize this Negro might be a little bit easier to mistreat than this Negro. This Negro, I don't know, our Negroization process maybe didn't work as well on this one. Maybe they got a little too much self-respect somehow. But, man, I'm going to leave this one alone. This one might be a little easier. They can recognize that, and that a lot of that is just black self-respect. And sometimes, as retired firefighter has said repeatedly, just being direct about, what is acceptable, what is not acceptable. Do we have other folks who had any other suggestions for the caller who wrote in, the sexual harassment and stalking situation? On bring your children to school, no less.
if this is the same listener that wrote previously about a similar situation, is this the same one?
Yes, sir.
So if you have this much documentation over this much time and you are feeling threatened, I would go about this order of steps. I would inform, you've already informed, your human resources about the sexual harassment. I would try to get a record that you did. And I would try to get them to, state whatever their policy is. I would try and, just if you have any of the former emails or communications from previous attempts to get clarification or set meeting times, I would get that together. And then I would go ahead and inform, I would Yelp employment
attorneys in my area, and then I would find a few. I would give a call to a few, and then I would, you know, tell my story to, you know, all of these people. I would tell all the stalking. I would tell all of that, and I would definitely do that. Also, I would go to the police. I would file a police report. I would begin and initiate the steps of getting some sort of restraining order against this person. If the behavior is documented and is ongoing, you can definitely get some sort of, order from them. And then this whole time, your attorney should be contacting the EEOC or whatever state body is in your, or whatever agency is in your state. And then from there, you're going to be protected from retaliation officially. You have legal representation. They're in the course of contacting the EEOC. You have a police report that has been filed against them. And at that point, you're going to be able to kind of navigate your legal action against them. Now, they may elect to, you know, terminate you once they catch wind of this. And that's why you have to do everything in order and, you know, in the course of a couple of days, really. After that, you know, if they do fire you, hey, you know, update your LinkedIn and be prepared to move. And for all listeners, keep your LinkedIn up to date, be prepared to move. One of the problems that we have and reasons why we find ourselves in these bad situations is not only the fact that we're living in a system of white supremacy, but the fact that we kind of limit ourselves and our opportunities by not having ourselves available to learn about new opportunities that could replace some of the bad situations that we're currently in. So, you know, just know that you are on the open job market. You do have options. But you definitely need to defend yourself, and you definitely need to take action against these people, especially if you have all of these incidences documented, and it's been ongoing, and it's only getting worse.
May I speak?
Yes, ma'am.
I would even go as far, if he does it again, and there are people around, I would go for the old-fashioned, like that fire.
Just for clarifying, do you mean the stalking or the touching? Because it was two predatory things that were taking place. Sorry for interrupting.
Particularly the touching. If there are people around and they're in earshot, you know how they kind of teach you to yell fire when you feel like you're in danger. I'd be like, you know, I really would appreciate it if you stop touching me and get people's attention at least. So like maybe then like she can even document that there were some eyewitnesses, you know, and then that would also kind of hopefully trigger an alarm in him that, okay, now she's going to make an outward fuss about it. And people are going to now see that I'm like, you know, I'm bothering this lady. And then maybe even going as far as like making an inquiry with security, I guess, in the building, or have a lawyer do it, to see if that area has cameras. Because if there's cameras around that, they can subpoena the footage later. That would support her case too. But I think she should like do something that's really vocal when he touches her, especially if there's people around, so she can get their attention. And I'll mute my line.
Big advocate of that, absolutely. And it's been, and she did say that this person she thinks is very premeditated, which doesn't surprise me with this sort of predator. So he might be waiting for it to be fewer people around, so you don't have those sort of witnesses and what have you. But be loud, use your voice. And that's why I said about the mirrors. That way you can kind of be a little more aware of your immediate surroundings. If it's seeming like it could be something where it's just you and this racist guy, predator in the area, go ahead and if you need to, you know, go to the women's restroom or just go to a more crowded area where you feel a bit safer. And then if he's doing the stalking thing, that might even be something to just call him out on if you notice him. Excuse me, Chuck, did you need something? Just noticed you. Did you need me for something? Didn't know if you were looking for me. Call him out on that to make it really obvious and see if that impacts the behavior as well. I did also want to make sure, really for any of the folks, with the attorney route, Mr. Williams, Mr. Fuller, do encourage victims just to be mindful that very important when you go that route that it could be a long time thing. There are some people with suits about being mistreated on the job that last years. You have to be very honest and upfront. Do I have that fortitude? I can see this through if it takes, 2-3 years for things to be resolved, because that absolutely is the case at times. And racists even know how to do that as well, to try and drag things out and make it more difficult for you to just get tired. Mr. Williams encourages victims before he even starts with, trying to help them out with codification. Could be a long process. Keep that in mind. Stay the course. Do we have other folks? Any other suggestions or folks we haven't heard from?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. Good evening, everybody. Good evening, Gus. I actually just had a couple of questions that could be used for interviews. I personally like to ask, since I'm in an industry that I'm a software developer in Wisconsin. I'm in an industry which could have some lengthy weeks, some lengthy nights. I usually like to ask, what's the work-life balance? I found that, frequently in these jobs, we may be expecting to work 40 to 45 hours a week, and we end up working 60 to 65 hours a week. So that's a really good question that I always like to ask. It also lets you know what kind of culture that you're coming into. I do think that it's important for people to know what the culture is, regardless of, I do think it's important for, especially for victims of racism, to know what the culture is. You can tell if a culture is a little lax, maybe there will be more overt racism going on at the job. In addition, sometimes you'll find out that they serve alcohol at this place. Oh, yes, we serve beers and we have a gym and everything else. And then that sort of, not only translates to, well, you'll be working for long periods of time, which is why we have all these things here, but also you'll be working around a lot of drinking and or drunk racist suspects, which you don't want. And another really good question that's a basic question is just, what is the dress code? Because a lot of times, just basic things like that, we may think that we know what people are expecting, but understanding just what are the basic things that they would require. And those are really simple questions, I think, that could actually work for almost any victim of racism. I've asked about work-life balance, and at this job I have right now, the manager that I had was in that interview, and he said, oh, well, every once in a while we work 60 hours a week, but if it takes you 30 hours in a week to do your work, I don't care. And I haven't had to work 60 hours a week since I've been here, and I've been there for 4 years. And then he went on to talk about foosball and asked me, did I play? And at that point, I realized just how lax the environment was, and what he expected work-life balance to be, which helped me out. And as far as I just wanted to thank Ken Steele for reminding people to update their LinkedIn. I said before that there's a merger happening at my job and that maybe I should be looking for a new plantation. So that's definitely a timely suggestion. And thanks very much. I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that. Caller in Wisconsin, context of white supremacy. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 5-6-4-9-4-3-pound. Press star 6-1 if you would like to participate. Do we have any folks that we missed completely? Anybody that we've not heard from at all?
I did talk, but I didn't share my workplace.
Oh, let's get that, Thomas in New York.
Yes, and I'm sorry about unmuting myself earlier. It was an accident. I told you about Friday on the Saturday show where she asked me to go to Starbucks. And I told her I'm protesting Starbucks, so she can't ask me that. So Monday I was off. It's a day off for anyone who worked tax season. They gave us a day off. You know, you pick what day. So I decided to take the 3-day weekend. Tuesday I woke up. My blood pressure was astronomical, like 200/140. It was real high. I was about to go to the hospital. I took my medicine. I called out, I laid down, I woke up later, I felt much better. It was much lower. Wednesday, I went to work. And then this morning, I woke up and my pressure was crazy high again. So I took my medicine. I said, Dad, I can't call out again this week. I'm gonna have to struggle in. So I just decided to go in late, you know, lay back down, let the medicine kick in for an hour or so. So I got there about 45 minutes late or so. Which wasn't a problem. However, on my way walking to the train now, my head is throbbing. And I'm walking to the train, and I get in front of a big housing complex that's right next to the train station. And I hear a little voice. Now, all I'm thinking is, I need to sit down, let me get to the train and sit. But the little voice I heard, I decided to look and see what it was. Took my headphone out. It was a little old black lady, very frail, with a cane. So I asked her, you know, what does she need? And she says, you know, right there at the curb is my cab, but it's so windy today that I'm afraid if I let go of this fence and start walking that way, the wind is going to make me fall. So I said, oh, no problem. I put my bags down. I helped this lady get in the cab. And she says, you know, you did your good day for today. God bless you and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, my headache kind of went away, so I wondered if her blessings worked. I get to work today, and I realized, just like yesterday, that the lady, the racist suspect who's been torturing me, she has an attitude. She's not talking to me, so I suspect it's behind the me denying to go to Starbucks for her. So, you know, finally she comes in today, and she was just so nasty. And the lady from Human Resources overheard it. And it was like she was asking me to do something that wasn't my job. I didn't have a problem doing it, but it was just I was asking questions to make sure that I did it exactly how she wanted it. And she didn't like the fact that I was asking the same questions again. But what she was saying to do, it was like so far off of what my job is. It entailed me to ask, you know, well, are you sure you want me to do that? So either way, the human resources lady says she wanted to speak to me about, you know, how my relationship with this lady is going. And I'm not quite sure how I want to proceed with that because I've heard the lady speaking very nasty to the human resources lady before. So I don't see how that's going to help at all. I'll wait and see how that the proceedings of that goes on. The last thing I wanted to add was back to the question asked earlier. It was, how would you proceed forward managing these white people? And one thing I've noticed that white people who've come in and taken over management at jobs I've had that the manager before them was black, is they come in and they generally befriend one or two black people, and they give them certain privileges that other people don't have in exchange for their loyalty. And I was thinking if, I know that they're way more codified than we are, but maybe that could, there's a suggestion that might work. And I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Wow. That, Thomas in New York, black health is critical. We will certainly be praying for your health. That is, I mean, man, that's devastating. Gwen, I was thinking of Gwen Ifill. We read the breakthrough because she passed away, I believe, at 62.
30 years. In reaction to what I told them about what was going on in my classroom the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, that older teacher said to
thank you for not using the mute button again. I'm trying to open up the folks' lines as I see hands. But if you know, especially if you are in a noisy environment, use your mute button. Very simple. And then you can unmute when you're ready to turn off whatever noise. Or if you need to quiet down a few folks, unmute. Then you can make your comment and then mute your line again. That's what I do. That way I can snicker and be loud while folks are making their commentary and they are not disturbed. Thank you kindly. But as I was saying, for Thomas in New York, that is, I mean, Black health is critically important. And I mean, dealing with this race soldier and the myriad of race soldiers, dealing with them and this nonsense where they harass you about the fruit and harass you about this and are grabbing at your genitals. And, you know, now you got, I mean, and that, in my view, it feels like that escalated so quick for someone who is nasty and rude. This white woman that you're talking about and who, you know, harasses everyone, bullies everyone in the workplace. And now I got to take time out of my day and go talk to HR about my relationship with this. Like, are you serious? Like, come on, man. Like, wow. Just, again, the importance, in my view, of being, you know, very serious and just strategic about things in the workplace so that we are solving problems without creating new problems. Did you have an addition, Thomas, in New York?
Yeah, so the human resources lady, like I said, she came to me and she, you know, we sat down. One problem I had, now, since I started this job, prior to this, I was working at the hospital where I had outstanding insurance and it was very cheap. So now I'm paying a lot more for worse insurance. However, I never received an insurance card. And, you know, this was something I probably should have looked in a lot earlier, but it never dawned on me. I just started looking through the mail, like, okay, I know the card has to be in the mail that I haven't opened. So it wasn't there. So I asked her today, like, hey, you know, I signed up for the insurance. You're taking the money out. I haven't received the card. So she swears that, you know, she's handled everything. It's been done properly. I should give the card. She gave me a number. She says, well, while you're here, let me call them. So she calls the insurance agency. And they asked me to verify my address, so I gave them my address, and they said, nope, wrong address. So I gave them another address that I might have used, I thought, you know, and nope, wrong address for that. So they didn't even have my right address, so that's why I didn't get a card for my insurance all this time. And I just thought that, you know, was interesting that she gave them the wrong address. I know people make mistakes, but I just, you know, anytime white people do so, I assume it's racism.
They do not get the benefit of the doubt after everything that we have been through. Logic. But the health aspect, I mean, it's so many Black people that are in that position where, I mean, they just further compromise their health because they have a job where they, you know, can't even take a day off or 2 or 3 days off for their health. I mean, that's just horrendous. And yeah, I hope, you know, as I said, we will definitely have you in our thoughts, prayers. Black health is critically important, but that is absolutely horrendous to have to struggle. And then to go to work, to struggle through all that to get to work, and then even more abuse waiting for you. Man, did we have anybody that we missed completely? Anybody who has a hand up that we've not heard from at all? Oh, caller in.
Can I be heard?
Hang on a second, Mr. Steele. Caller in Florida. Did you have commentary, sir?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to us, the host, the listeners, and callers. I wanted to start out with there was a few non-white people that's been coming in they are in the non-black labeled categories, like, I guess, like Latino or other terms that are used. Like, they've been coming in, like, with these requests to get, like a final injunction for, like, restraining orders. And they will be petitioning them against white people who are aggressors or practicing racism. And what's interesting is that the white people who are calling them, like, slurs, like, one lady is called the spick, okay? I'm sure people have heard that term. Now, she has this typed out in her, one of her, anecdotes, or you have to list three incidents of, some kind of a domestic violence or threat of violence or stalking or sexual violence, because they have them categorized. And she said this person is calling her a fat stick. And this person has W by her racial classification. And, you know, they go to use, like, abbreviations, acronyms. So I'm thinking W would mean for white. And there's another person that would be, labeled Indian. Also had that by her police report, like, description or whatever. And she also had, like, an incident with, like, her boyfriend or whatever, like, doing, like, a domestic violence on her, calling her, like, a something curry or something. And, like, I think I've heard somebody call him, like, the master of name calling or something. Maybe it was on some other program. But they do come up with all kind of slurs and derogatory terms. But there's a trend of that I'm seeing. And my next report is, like, there was a couple that came in on a tragic arrangement. It was a pregnant white woman and a black male. And this email goes out. My coworker, black female, like me and her, we get this email from the lady in personnel asking, does anybody know how to do sign language? So I was kind of confused. I didn't know what was going on. So she looked at me and kind of looked over to them. So I'm guessing one of the people in the couple needed sign language interpretation. Okay, so they don't, speak verbally. And the black male apparently needed that sign language interpretation. So I think she ended up telling him all the information in the marriage license session. Like, after the application, they never was able to find anybody to interpret to him. So she did the interpreting. I found that kind of, I don't know, that was a unique situation to me. And it just adds another control mechanism to how that so-called relationship dynamic is going to play out. And because the reason I say that is how that's going to function, how that's going to make their lifestyle function. She's pretty much, I think, the only person that can communicate to him as a white person, and she's subjugating him to her, in that kind of arrangement. And there was another email that went out on the 20th. That was last Friday. And a shooting happened down here in Ocala. Well, I'm not in Ocala, but here down here in Florida. And people were saying, well, hey, I wonder if this could be on the date of Columbine, And I was thinking, isn't that Adolf Hitler? In that, I think that's his birth date. And, you know, I had started just like giggling out of nowhere. And the reason I bring this up is an email goes out from the white woman that called me out in the meeting about the earbuds. She sent out the YouTube video about, you know, like an active shooter, what they're doing in the case of a shooting. And I'm gonna try and see if I can send you that link, Gus, to see if you can check out the video and give your analysis. But from what I get from the video, definitely loaded with racism, in my view. And my last report is
loaded with racism. Like, how? It's an active shooter video. How is an active shooter video loaded with racism? You don't have to, you know, break down the whole thing. Give us like one example.
Well, I would say, for one, like, well, when you first look at it, like, you'll notice that they do have an accurate that the shooter is, it appears to be a white man. And they have that correct, but like everything he has on is black, like shades, the shirt, the pants, like the gun, everything is, the boots, like everything is black. Okay. And like throughout the whole video, it's like they're trying to preserve and show that the value to protect white life is like very emphasized in the video, like from when I seen it. Especially it's a part where there's like a white woman who's like crying and very hysterical, like she can't protect herself, and you have this hulking black male and a white man who tells the white woman to just sit down, you know, we'll protect. And they have a portion of the video where the white man tries to come through the door because he starts pulling his gun out and he's killing people in the video. But like they go by this three-step thing called run, hide, and fight. Run, hide, and fight. And when it comes to the fight portion, they have the shooter that's playing, or the actor that's playing the shooter in the video, come to a room, and they're reenacting what a fight would look like. So they pick up these chairs and stuff, and they'll freeze frame it as they're about to hit the guy with the chair. And you see the white woman hiding in a corner, like they're trying to protect her, preserve her life. So like that's one of the main parts. And they don't show him getting arrested or killed in the demonstration.
They don't really arrest white people anymore. How interesting. Okay. What was, you had one more. Sorry for the interruption.
No, no problem. Like this one was, I think, was very interesting. This happened earlier this week. I was processing the envelopes in a machine. And the new white woman in our department, she stopped by and she said, "Oh, I'm glad you're here, you know. I'm glad you're here." I'm like, "Wow." I said, "What was going on? What happened?" And she said, "You know, on the way down here, I was getting off the elevator and this guy, he was just standing in the hallway. And, you know, I asked him if he needed help with anything. And he says, oh no, I'm fine. I'm doing okay." So she's pushing a cart with boxes of documents in them. So she goes to the records division. It's a door down the hallway. As she passes him, and she says, she turns around, she sees this guy. I guess she assumed that he was trying to follow her. And she says, "You know, hey, I just went on inside because I was afraid." So see, nine, okay, in my mind, the terms that she's using, like the way she's telling me this, I automatically know that she's talking about a black male. All right.
see, now when you have these kind of situations, they'll tell you, you know, they'll give you the descriptors. And she says, yeah, the guy was a tall, and he was black. And she said, he had on an orange shirt. Now, she's telling this to me. You know, now she's like, why would she say, I'm glad you're here? Now, this happened to me before, and I don't know what I would term this, but this is when a white woman would try to set up some kind of scenario for me to get physically involved with another black male that she is suspected to try and do some kind of malicious harm to her, or like trying to, I guess, imply that he was going to rape her or something. But, you know, she was looking like she was just, like she was just afraid, you know? Like, hey, well, I said, no big deal. I got work to do. that's pretty much all the reports I have right now. And she just went on back upstairs. I said, I have work to do. Busy right now.
Hit the courthouse. Lessons in white supremacy, PhD lessons in racism, white supremacy. I think that is very common. I don't know if other folks that are with us like right now can attest to that, but a white woman like feigning terror, like, oh my gosh, there was a grizzly Negro right around the corner, and I'm so thankful you're here. And it even seems like there's something, not just the rape thing, fantasizing about, you know, the black person raping them, but yeah, very, very common, even in the workplace. I'm sure other people can attest to that. I even told, that's kind of similar, the story that I shared a few weeks back about the white woman that I worked with saying that she thought I was the Negro that she needed, you know, protection from. Anyway, that I had not heard of that. I don't know if that's a trend, but folks going to file the injunctions for these acts of racism, white supremacy. Not sure if that would be effective in stopping whites from those sort of acts, the name calling and such. I don't know, but it is something, and at minimum, it would be on their record in the future if they have, you know, future transgressions. And if these folks are engaged in this sort of terroristic behavior, then they probably will continue. At least, you know, that'll be on their record that, oh, wow, you've got, you know, you've been reportedly involved in these other incidents and people have taken out, you know, injunctions against you. That might be helpful. Wouldn't get my hopes up too high, but at least good to be observant. Any other folks that we missed completely? Any people that we have not been able to hear from at all? We nabbed everybody. We didn't miss any of the folks who had commentary, questions, your own situation you wanted to share. Oh, Emmy, if you are with us, you should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Greetings.
Greetings, beautiful people. I didn't get to hear everyone's commentary this evening, so forgive me if I'm not necessarily responding to anything. I kind of recently just jumped in. I had a very interesting experience at work last week, and it was so interesting only because I had listened to I had listened to Mr. Fuller speak, and he had mentioned this at some point, and then I'm forgetting the man's name that spoke on one of the, maybe it was the last week's workplace racism, but getting to the point, when people want to bad talk non-white, specifically black people in the workplace, redirecting the conversation to follow up with the question, so how do we help this person? I think it's genius. I think it's just pure brilliance, and I think it encapsulates everything that is Black self-respect while being active at the same time. So this is Emmy. I'm out here in just between D.C. and Virginia, and I'm in the pharmacy, and there's myself, and there's an Ethiopian Black pharmacist, and there's a white female technician, and a confused non-white but white Egyptian, so-called Egyptian, whatever, pharmacist. So the two white and white identified individuals have tried to get me to bad talk the Black pharmacist before, but I don't engage in that. That's a code. That's been a code for a while. I just don't say anything, or I just kind of praise him, or I, like, you know, I don't make up things. I just highlight what I think he does very, very well. And there are things that he does very, very well. He is not as anal or as systematic or as organized as the white identified pharmacist or white pharmacist. But there's more to healthcare than how well you're able to streamline your processes. So there you go. So, but this particular day, I don't know what happened, but every time I work with the Black pharmacist and I come in and work with the white one always wants to complain to me about whatever it was that was left over for him. I have been very tired. I am stretched thin. So usually I'm able to just, you know, navigate through that just fine. But this particular time, I was just like, look, when I leave, the queue is clear, okay? Because if it's not clear, I stay and we clear it. Because I watch the Ethiopian run around with, like, you know, a crazy person trying to make sure that he doesn't leave anything over for this white guy here to bitch and complain about, excuse my language. He decided to take me through different parts of our system so that I could look at the queue to see if there's anything that's hiding, like a prescription that maybe have dropped in, like a courtesy refill or something that wouldn't necessarily pop on my screen. Not to get you too involved, but apparently there are other ways that prescriptions can be in the queue that I may not see. So he showed me a couple of ways. Then he decided to go into maybe like a 30, 45 minute complaining session about this pharmacist. I listened and took note of what he was saying. And, you know, when he decided to pause and ask me my opinion or anything, I responded with, well, I am not going to talk about anybody. That is just not what I do. But if the question is how, you know, what do I think should be done to help him, or, you know, something like that, that's a, you know, I'm about the solution. That's pretty much what I said. I'm about the solution. So your venting is you venting. I don't have anything to vent about him, but I understand if we want to make the pharmacy a more productive place. So what ways can you show me to better help him when it is just he and I? And the look on his face was priceless. And I was just like, in my head, I was like, take that. You tried to catch me up, but you ain't get me. So, yeah, I felt really, really good about that, because I was like, when the code works, it feels just, man, it just feels really good. And they redirected the conversation, and he showed me some other things, you know what I mean? And that's all I kept saying is, all I want to do is help him. All I want to do is help him because I think he's fantastic. I even said some of the things he does really well. And then that pharmacist tried to do it, like, because the Black pharmacist spends a lot of time counseling. He will be up and down the aisles with people, helping them find OTCs that will help them until they, you know, get insurance or whatever. Those are the kind of things schooling will never give you that. You either genuinely care about people or you don't. So next thing you know, now he's spending all this time giving all this counsel and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, whatever. But so to end that, what I'm going to do the next time that I work with him is I am going to have a conversation with him and let him know, if he does not already, because I kept saying, you know, whatever you feel, you should be saying to him, not me. I'm going to let him know that whatever, like, maybe we can come up with something to help him. Like, you know, so when I get in, what can we do to make sure that you are able to do what you need to do? Because corporate or whatever is only going to hear so many complaints about you before it really does become an issue. So I don't know. I'm not going to trust this white person that this white person is having these conversations with him, because he could have lied to me. So I'm going to be very strategic, but I am going to give this Black man a heads up and say, you know, I don't know exactly what I'm going to say, but how can I help you so that you are better able to handle this workload? Because people are complaining, and it's going to be an issue. So I don't think that you want that. So that's that.
then I had an exam on like a Wednesday. So I was like, I'm not going to work on Tuesday. I cannot work the day before an exam, particularly for the class that told you I felt the last exam. So I had to put all my energies there. But in order for me to get that day, I had to work another shift on another day, which was 4:20. And I think that white female tech, I think she was doing 4:20. And I was just like, that female got me over here so she can go sit and get high. But I just wanted to share that. Well, that same day, there was another tech that filled in a little bit before I could get in. And apparently the white pharmacist, like she told me that, you know, she told me everything that she did. And she was like, but he told me not to change the trash. And I was just like, why? In my head, I'm thinking, why? And this is the same day he decided to complain. Why did you tell this white female not to change the trash? So am I the only person changing the trash up in this? So I literally was like, okay, you know what I'm saying? We're going to just experiment and we're going to watch this because I don't know why he told her not to. If she didn't have nothing to do, change the trash. Like, I don't understand what the problem is. But so I guess I'm the only person changing the trash and stocking. So then I get in today. And apparently there's some conference call. Now, I don't know because white people lie. White people just lie. Like, just that's it. And so he wanted to tell me how corporate is saying that we have to clean the pharmacy top to bottom and do all this extra stuff. So I just listened. I put my cold face on or whatever. But I'm going to talk to the black pharmacist about it and come up with, like, because I'm not cleaning the pharmacy. Like, all of that is dead. So what we're going to do is come up with a spreadsheet of all the things that need to be cleaned. And people can choose the things they're going to clean and mark off and sign that they cleaned it. And we're going to divvy between her and I don't know if the pharmacists are really going to get involved. If they don't, I totally understand. Like, I wouldn't, if I was a pharmacist, be cleaning for real. Like, come on now. So, but we're going to split that spreadsheet. And if I have to make that spreadsheet, that's what we're going to do. But I will not be cleaning this pharmacy because that's just not, like, nah, that's dead. So, but anyway, that's what and the final thing I wanted to say, in terms for anybody in school or anybody who's doing anything that's just requiring a lot of from you, you know, always do the best you can. I think that that is a great psychological buffer because even if you don't do well, at least you can look at yourself in the mirror and say you did the best you could. So when you do it again, it'll be better the second, third, fourth, whatever time. But if you go into it half-assed, you don't give your best, then when you look in the mirror, you can't necessarily say that you did your best. So you don't really know what could have happened. Just whatever you do, give your best. I think that's a great way to protect our minds from, you know, negative self-talk or anything like that. So hopefully something I said was helpful or whatnot. If not, oh, well, it is what it is. I thank you all for listening. Thanks.
It is what it is. That's what a hoot. I did want to say phenomenal black self-respect. Try to make sure I give out robust, sincere, commendations when we have black people, non-white people who make an effort on the job to demonstrate black self-respect. And I'm not going to participate in bashing and talking bad and, you know, just making fun of another black person. I'm not going to do it on a job at any time. I'm not going to entertain a white person do it. And that was Mr. Edward Williams, founder of counter-racism.com. counter-racism.com. Mr. Edward Williams earlier, just a few days earlier, we were talking about strategies, different techniques for when whites engage in that exact sort of trashy behavior. I'm just going to pick out, you know, whichever nigger is not here, knowing it'll be you when you leave, but whichever nigger is not here, I'm going to tell a few jokes and see if I can get the other niggers to laugh about it. He said, I'll just let them talk. And then when they get to the end, give them one of the, what can we do to help that person? And I thought, brilliant then. Let's go back in the archives. It was great. Asked him, you know, how people normally respond. But yeah, I mean, that to me is the way you're supposed to function in the workplace, right? We're a family. That's what they say. Like, why are we just sitting around to talk bad about somebody? Can't we, let's see if we can solve a problem. That way it would be better for everybody, right? Oh, no, you know what? I just wanted to talk a little trash about that Negro, or you Negros, because again, it'll be you when you're not there. But beautiful compensatory conversation control to redirect things in a constructive manner. Brilliant Black self-respect. And definitely, let's see, the do your best. I think I've heard that from quite a few of our guests. I think Dr. Welsing and some others have said pretty much the same thing. Do your best. Try to learn as much as you can. And even understanding that white supremacy does not want to see Black people do their very best at anything. So just keep that in mind. Try to do your best, whatever the situation, predicament happens to be. Did we miss anybody before I was going to comment on the school situation as well, but did we miss anybody? Anybody that we missed completely? Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to all the callers on the line. I wanted to say, first of all, to Thomas in New York, I agree with Gus. I'm extremely sorry that you are dealing with blood pressure issues. And just from previous broadcasts, I have an idea of your age range, and you know you're very young, and to be dealing with blood pressure issues is just, I don't even have words. And I know for Black people, we especially deal with that and just heart problems in general. And, you know, we die a lot from that. And so I really, as Gus said, I'll be thinking of you and praying for you that, you know, you get completely well and that, you know, you don't have any more high blood pressure problems, and that this race soldier, that she something gets done with her. Hopefully the HR situation and that person observing her terrorizing you, that will be a step toward getting that situation remedied. I know that, you know, the situation looks pretty grim, but I hope that it works out for you. I really wish you the best. And for the person who's been being stalked and all of that, I think that the advice that has been given out has been incredible, and I think that whether the person gets retaliated, whether she gets retaliated against or not, that she should call the cops. And I think that she shouldn't deal with this race soldier, this rapist, in my view, under any circumstances, work related or not, if at all possible. And I wanted to ask actually two questions. Something I was kind of confused about, whether or not Big Victim is in need of another job, given that the truck driving, I guess, company has been sold to someone. And I also wanted to know from our codified software developer, like, you know, what she was saying, like, is she saying that, you know, somebody was murdered at her job, or they're dealing with a murder investigation that is, you know, putting her at some sort of risk where, you know, she may need to find another job. There was something else, but those are the two things that I could remember, if possible, if I could get some clarity on those things.
Caller in Wisconsin, if you want to answer that question, I can answer for Big Victim, unless I'm really victimized. I think he told us that he got a slight upgrade, a little bit more cornbread on the plantation with the buyout, that he didn't lose his job, that slight upgrade. I think he even said that his 401k got a slight increase as well. So he said so far things are smooth, so it would seem he does not need a new job. Caller in Wisconsin, did you want to answer the other question?
Yes. Ivy, good evening. But maybe I wasn't clear. Not murder, but merger. Merger. So, two companies are joining together. And so I may need to find a new plantation. But thanks for your concern. I'll meet my mind.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. And I hope that you do. And thanks, Gus, for the clarification. I actually remembered the last thing, which was that I agree with you, Gus, what you just said about Emmy. Like, that was incredible, you know, what she just shared about, you know, helping the her coworker out just in a variety of ways from, you know, how can we help this person? And even I believe she spoke about going to them personally and letting the person know, you know, that there's, you know, there's some complaints about you and just, you know, trying to help that person in so many different ways. Like, that's incredible. And that's all I had on me and my line. Thanks, everyone. And thanks, Gus.
Indeed.
May I be heard?
Yes. Is this our caller in New Orleans?
No.
Oh, okay.
Red, but, somebody else? It reminded me of something, but I can wait if somebody else is going to speak. But I wanted to say something else.
Oh, you're good. I just wanted to, I don't want to rely on my memory. Emmy, the other anecdote that she shared about apparently this white woman being notified that she did not have to change the trash, I think that's so important because I think whites do things like that all the time. These are their little plantation antics, just something so subtle as that, where you don't have to mention racism. Don't even have to mention Emmy. You just go tell the white person, oh, no, you don't have to do that. There isn't even a rule in the office that Emmy's the only one that's going to do the trash. All it takes is one white person, one race soldier, to go and just say, oh, yeah, don't do that. And then miraculously, the black person becomes the only one responsible for dumping the trash. That sort of thing happens all the time in the system of white supremacy. That's why I said sometimes you just have to be alert because these types of things are happening constantly. There's no way you could catch them all. But I think the more mindful you are that, yes, white supremacy, racism is the most dominant problem in the universe. And every single individual classified as white is dedicated to eternally preserving that system. If that's true, and you remain mindful of that when you're hyper vigilant about that, really, when you're around whites, you will pick up on lots of things happening just like that, so subtle in the workplace. Great job at detecting that as well, just being alert. Anybody we missed, make sure. Oh, Red, thank you kindly. See, that's why I said I didn't want to rely on my memory. Red, thank you.
No problem. Thank you for allowing me to share again. I'll try to make this quick. But Avi had said it made me think about it, and I don't want anybody to get too alarmed because I'm actually not very I am alert, but I'm not really I'm just going to say I'm alert. But I think it was either last week or maybe the week before, and it could have been a rumor, but I had overheard someone say that there was a disgruntled worker. I think they had just been fired or whatever, and they had made like a threat to come up to the job and either bomb it or shoot it or something like that. And they said, somebody said they had to call the police, but I kind of feel like it was a white person. There was actually in Las Vegas, somebody, there was a casino worker. He went and he kind of shot up some of his ex-coworkers at a park, I think, or something like that. But it just kind of made me, I'm on alert. So maybe just given the fact that these white people, they have no plans of giving up their guns. Maybe we should all just be more aware, especially with, you know, them being sexual terrorists and then also, you know, just crazy, you know, just racist, just to, you know, definitely stay alert. Even if somebody does not seem disgruntled, just making sure we do stay alert with all the white men. I know it's usually white men, but any white person about, you know, if they're angry, you don't just think that, you know, they're just angry, you know, with the job. They might be angry with everyone, and they can, you know, just make sure that you stay focused. But the other thing that I was going to say is that one of the things that I'm having to really to deal with at this job, I mentioned before how the whole anti-sexuality thing is really rampant at the job. And today I didn't know that it was Lesbian Visibility Day. They sent out a little memo about that and trying to keep my disgust for all that to myself, because it seems like they definitely put more attention to the, you know, the anti-sexuality, even more so with the story that I just brought up, because I happened to just overhear someone say that, and there was not a memo that went out or anything saying that, you know, if you feel, you know, if you overhear someone or anything like that, it seems like they care more about anti-sexuality than, you know, anything else, any other type of safety. And the last thing I want to share, it's a little bit of Area 8, but I'm going to make it really brief. At my mother's job, she said she's actually having to deal with a white anti-sexual woman who kind of seems like she is getting too close in proximity to my mother. And also she's kind of like, you know, wasting her time going up to my mother's desk. She said that most recently the woman had came up to her desk and wanted her to try out this pen to see if it would write well. My mother thought the woman was giving her the pen. She wasn't. So my mother was trying to give the woman back the pen. And then the woman throws the pen on her desk and kind of laughs and just kind of goes off. And the woman has wasted my mother's time telling her stories about her anti-sexuality and stuff like that. So I feel like, I don't know what it is, but definitely not. We really have to pay attention to not just white men, it's white women as well. Definitely, you know, everybody is really, wanting to consume us, same sex and all. But I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Indeed. Wow.
Hi, folks.
Stacy in the UK, almost 4 a.m. Friday morning. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier on about the, we were talking about surveillance and the two white women that were spying on each other. And I wanted to just, this is one of my experiences from a previous role. And I guess the key point here is just about how fickle our jobs can be and how we do have to find ways to manage our managers and understand all the twists and turns of their psychopathic natures. Now, this manager that I work to, so not the overarching director, but the manager or the program director, was three of us working on this project, and a younger black female who supported the both of us, so managing diaries and doing various administrative tasks, but she actually reported to me. And she had been there for 6 months, so our probationary periods over in the UK usually around 6 months. And I didn't really have to agree anything with this program director, but courtesy and, you know, just we're a team. I met with her and I was happy to pass the girl's probation, and I was in agreement with the program director that we should pass her probation. So the warring between the program director and the director went on for a while. And also we had a chair of the project that we were working on. So there was a partnership board, and I don't think he liked the program director either. So I think he used to play all sorts of games. So I think she's just under pressure from all sides. But they're all as dangerous as each other, so I have no sympathies for any of the above. But the program director had gone off to a meeting with the partnership chair. And one of the things they were talking about is, because she was a consultant, so they were talking about how she could continue her to be paid on the job longer term, and that she would have to seek ways to get funding for her position, which she was pissed off about. But when she'd got to that meeting, apparently there was no meeting in the diary, so she travelled all the way over to his office. And so when she got back to me, she pulled me into a meeting, and she said, right, I want you to fire the black female. And then she explained to me what had happened. And I thought, hang on a minute here. I mean, we didn't even actually check up that actually this girl had made a mistake at that point. And I can't remember if I ever asked, but I thought, hang on a minute. Even if she did make a mistake, she'd been in that job for 6 months. For 6 months, we're so happy with her performance that we're going to pass her probation. Even if she did mess up and get a meeting wrong, it was really not the end of the world. It's something I could have had a quick conversation with her about. And I realised that this programme director wasn't even mad at her. She was mad about the situation and the warring that was going on with her programme director. And the organisation that I was actually employed by, they have some rules. So there was no way that I could just out of the blue decide that I'm going to end this girl's probation and basically fire her. And there was no way I was going to do it anyway. Now, luckily, I'd had a good enough relationship with this director at the time to know exactly how much of a psychopath she was and how to manage her. So I rant for a while. I said, you're pissed off, aren't you, about what went on with program director and the board of the chair? And she started to relax and get that off her chest. I said, yeah, so we don't really want to sack this girl, do we? She goes, no, perhaps not. So I goes, okay, all right. And then I just continued to allow her to release about her pain and suffering with these two people, the partnership board chair and also the our overarching director. But it just goes to show just how fickle. She did not have a problem with this girl. We'd agreed to pass her probation the week before, and just because she's pissed off about something else, she was prepared to fire this girl for something which was actually quite trivial. And that, you know, our jobs can be just so fickle. Somebody can just be in the mood and want to take their bad mood out on somebody else. I'll mute my line there, Gus.
That is the system of white supremacy. And question lane, are you upset about what happened earlier? Do you really want to sack her? Questions. And that right there can be a skill, even just knowing the racist that you have to work with so that you can de-escalate. That can be a very helpful skill in the workplace. And this time used to help a black person not be fired. That is, you know, spectacular. But the point I think that Stacey was making there, that, I mean, we're talking about somebody's livelihood. She could have been a mother or, you know, be taking care of other people or just taking care of herself alone. And just because, you know, I'm disgruntled, yes, fire her. Just, you know, because I'm racist and I can do that. That's everyday worldwide system of white supremacy. Did we miss anybody? Anybody that did not get a chance to say anything at all? Because we're basically at the 3-hour mark. Okay, soon we got everybody. The first time caller in New Orleans, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wow. She's hanging in nearly 11 p.m., I think, if I can do. Oh, it's 10. They're central. Almost 10 p.m. In Louisiana, if you're there. Were you the one, ma'am, that you were going to comment? It was about asking about education in the workplace. Did you have one more anecdote on that?
Well, I wanted to tell the gentleman that the truck driver that I also co-signed with what he was saying about learning our kids getting vocational skills, because education nowadays seems like a financial death trap. It's basically, you know, equivalent to a mortgage, but you can't even file bankruptcy on it. And I'm telling my son, you know, he gets very good grades, but I told him, if you don't get a full ride, son, you're gonna do something else, you know, with skills that you've developed, because there's no point in getting into debt. And, you know, getting into debt just to find yourself not getting a job at all, or getting a job that has nothing to do with what you went to school with, which is something I had to do for like 4 years after I got my bachelor's.
Very important. I will make sure to post, and I will share that audio that was basically saying the same thing, although it was in Seattle. That's all I need to say. I was going to say it was focused on white people, but I could just substitute and say they were reporting from Seattle. But I'll play that next week. It was on NPR just 48 hours. Anyway, we'll be here tomorrow. Speaking of Area 8, the Hate U Give final session. Angie Thomas, I'm so glad to be done with this book. I've hated it, but in a very different way than a typical book that I would dislike. I've hated it, but it has been so informative knowing that literally millions of black children are being required to read this book. Just wow. I'm looking forward to the movie coming out. I'm looking forward to writing a review. I'm so glad we read it, and we'll be wrapping it up tomorrow. Folks, if you have a final thought, if you know any black youth children, if they had to read the book for school, if they read it, you know, just for fun, Tell them, see if they can hang out with us for a little while. They don't have to hang out for the whole program. They can, if they just want to share a quick thought, what they had to say about the book, if they liked it, if they think we're heathens for talking bad about Ms. Thomas's book, that's fine too. But I would absolutely love it to hear from some of the Black children who've had to read this book, and or if there are any, you know, Black people, period, non-white people, period, who read and liked this book. I would be curious to hear, you know, what exactly they found appealing about The Hate U Give. But we're all done tomorrow. Thank goodness we persevered. Final thing I wanted to get in, just the situation in Thomas in New York. I just, that is appalling, in my opinion. Only in a system of white supremacy would you have such a thing. But that racism, white supremacy, obviously causes a lot of stress for Black people. A lot of disease and discomfort, and just totally obliterates Black health. I think some of the things that we can do to try to combat that, all of the health issues and the hypertension and high blood pressure, so much of that, I think, or at least some measure of that, I'll put it this way, some measure of that, I think, could be neutralized just by doing the best job we can with the foods that we are eating. I have spent a lot of time talking about, you know, yoga activities, and yoga has generated lots of cool little anecdotes because I'm wearing my counter-racist t-shirt and what have you and battling racists on the yoga mat. But a big part of the weight loss and everything for this year for Gus has also been, Gus has been vegan for the last 4 months. I'm certainly not saying you know, need to give up all of your tasty vittles, but Dr. Kanban said a big part of the war, racism, white supremacy, is right on our plates. I think we were talking about recognizing these things are not constructive. This might be racist man and racist woman's diet. This is not what I am going to eat. This is not healthy for my body. And if I'm attempting to be a counter-racist or an attempted parent, just being more mindful about things that we eat can have a huge, huge impact. And especially those types of ailments, the hypertension and high blood pressure, a lot of times one of the first things they will say is, you need to lose some weight. A lot of that, and even the high blood pressure, and a lot of that is connected to bad food and racist, again, white supremacists. They do a lot to push lots of really unhealthy foods on us that are just going to quickly break down our bodies and just make us more and more unhealthy to fight off their system, replace white supremacy with justice. So not saying you got to be vegan. That is a massive transition for most people who could not imagine giving up, you know, dairy and chicken and everything. But it is April. I have lost nearly 50 pounds. That would not be the case if it was just the yoga. The vegan diet is a big part of that, and I feel a lot better. I've heard the same reports. We had Tracy McWhorter on the program by Any Greens Necessary, her book. Lots of great information. We had Dr. Layla Africa on the program. Lots of books, lots of literature saying lots of the same things with more science and quite a bit more eloquent, but the same general point. A lot of the war of racism, white supremacy is going down at mealtime. That can be used to neutralize just eating correct foods as best we can. Eating correct foods can really be a big part in working against racism, white supremacy. Racists do not want to see Black people doing as much as we can to be healthier and taking good care of ourselves. That's it. We will be here tomorrow. Feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have guest suggestions, gripes, if you have commentary for workplace racism, untiljustice@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone, for tuning into the broadcast. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Again, sobriety would be best, whether you are traveling abroad or not. I think we would be best served by preserving our brain computers, our health, by saying, no thanks, got enough poisons already, trying to get rid of that, don't need any new ones. I'm going to preserve my brain computer so that I can make excellent decisions and come up with new solutions to immediately solve the problem, white people. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.